This is The Oasis.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 93 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
It's going to be a shit episode, this. You might as well just give up now. Not really! It's going to be amazing like it always is. Mark, what's coming up?
Our main review on this episode is the massive Ready Player One.
It's made for you, isn't it?
We'll find out very, very shortly.
We're going to be rewatching a Ben Wheatley classic. It's Sightseers, one of his earlier pieces of work. I'll be very interested to hear what Mark says. It's his first viewing, I understand.
It really is.
And ooh, it's going to be a revisit for you, Ben.
Yes,
right?
I've seen it a couple of times now, yeah.
Excited.
Yes. Our topic of conversation are our top three spoofs or parodies, so that should be a very fun one.
So much to choose from on that one as well.
Yeah, big time. Yeah.
On this episode, we're going to be masturbating over Tilda Swinton. There's so much body of work there. I'm so intrigued that I don't know if we'll have the same. I'm going to say it now. I think we might all have something different, which would be nice.
It'll be interesting. And speaking of interesting, we've only got a brand new game show this episode.
Woo!
Oh my God. It's going to be me versus Mark. Ben is the quiz master, and it is aptly titled Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mastermind.
Genius title. Good work, Ben.
Yes.
Yeah. I wasn't really aiming for genius. I was aiming for dumb as fuck. Oh. But okay, I'll take it. And of course, we'll have all the usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll take listener questions, we'll give you our pop culture recommendations of the week, and we'll give away some fantastic prizes.
We've got some prizes this time.
Ooh.
Yay.
We've got a letter from a fan this week. Her name is Charlotte Ralph Gledhill, and she recently won one of our t-shirts on a recent episode, so she got it in the post. And she sent us a letter in the post that came through that said, Mark, Ben, Gemma, I hope you're well, and I hope this gets to you in one piece. You are on a fantastic podcast, so I've decided to give you all some prizes because you don't ask for anything in return, and I think it's time that you had something from us, which is pretty nice. So she's married to Andy, and Andy's been listening to the podcast for a very long time, and they together thought it's about time that we had something. So this is something that's gone quite nicely, I think, because it's a bit of craft work. So Ben.
Ooh. Yeah.
You've got some origami from Blade Runner.
Oh, excellent,
which,
yeah.
Look how good that
that's
is.
That's cool.
Look at that little origami unicorn. That's amazing.
An origami key for Gemma.
Oh, I like it.
A little shark that she's made me, which is really sweet. But this is the best thing, and I think we should have this as our kind of mascot, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is, when you see the work that's gone into this, she's made us a little alien.
Wow.
Look how good the detail is. We'll put this on Instagram and Twitter, but she's made us that.
Is that out of that, like, Fimo stuff?
Yes.
What's it called? You know that you can
like
bake it, yeah, but
stuff,
then you bake it and it goes hard.
That's
absolutely amazing. We need to take a picture of that and put it on Instagram
please.
And stuff.
So if anyone's listening and thinks, I want to send Skip to the End some stuff, get in touch because we like presents, but look how cool that is.
Yeah.
We will
that's
put
amazing.
It on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And if you go on skiptotheend.co.uk, you can get links to all that. But I like the little personal touches. It's something that's, you know, craft stuff. It's a bit more than just going to the shop and buying crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I finally have my key to room 237, guys.
There we go.
Party.
Excellent. We will take vouchers, though.
But thank you very much, Charlotte. We really appreciate it. And it's nice to see these sort of things come too. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's get started. Our topic this time round, it's our top three parodies or spoofs. This one has been incredibly popular on social media because there are just so many.
Far too many.
Far too many.
I sound like a broken tape player, but it was our most popular topic on Twitter.
Really?
The most replies we've ever had.
I can't say I'm surprised, to be
honest.
There's some debate out there about some of them. Do they qualify? Is it a spoof or is it an homage?
I saw our fans fighting between themselves about Shaun of the Dead and stuff like that. They were going, nope, and one was going, yep. And it was quite nice to see people interacting, but not in a nice way. They were fighting.
Full on scraps.
But yeah, it was pretty good.
Well, let's see if there's going to be any squabbling between us. Pooch, I'm going to throw it to you first. What's your first pick?
So whenever I hear the word spoof film, it's always this one. My first choice is The Naked Gun.
I've got it too.
I've got it three.
Yay!
Of course it is. And it stars Leslie Nielsen as the incompetent police detective Frank Drebin. And he's got to stop an assassination attempt on the Queen. Like I said, whenever I hear the word spoof, Leslie Nielsen's little face always pops up in my brain. And his deadpan delivery is just something of a masterclass of acting. It's always executed perfectly. The one-liners are just hilarious. And the unacceptable amount of chaos going on around him and where he's completely oblivious to the whole thing always slays me. It's just, it's spawned about two other films, so there's a trilogy of them, and I think this is by far my favourite one. And of course, we get to see the acting talents of Ms. Priscilla Presley, who is surprisingly funny in this. She's always been known as Elvis's Mrs., but she's great as Jane. She's the great straight man in Frank Drebin's just ridiculousness character. One of my favourite bits of this film, it's only like about a 10-second bit, but it's when they're hooking up together and he's sort of coozing her here. I practice safe sex. Cut to the next scene in there in the bedroom and they're in full-on condom outfits, just getting it on. Yeah. But it's a film that whenever I rewatch, I always find something brand new that I didn't see before. So it's a great excuse to keep watching it over and over again. Same rules apply with 33 and a third and 2.5.
Yeah.
I got those mixed up, but never mind. Also, the actress who plays the Queen is a mean double.
Yes, she does look a lot like the Queen.
It is uncanny. But, of course, when we see her sort of with Frank trying to save her life in the dinner scene, you know, and he sort of throws her across the table, they go like 10, 15 feet yards or whatever, and he's in between her legs. And then you see the newspapers at the very next scene, and it's just them in various different positions that we didn't see in the actual scene. It's just, it is a wonderful spoof film. It's a wonderful actor leading this film. And my God, I miss Leslie Nielsen so, so much.
Yeah, me too. And we've talked about there being a couple of sequels, but of course it's a spin-off of a TV show. There was a short-lived show called Police Squad that only lasted 6 episodes.
And it's hilarious.
It is. It's absolutely brilliant. It still holds up. It's amazing. And the creators of the show and the films, David Zucker, Jerry Zucker and Jim Abrams, they really pioneered this rapid-fire joke slapstick style of parody that really began with Airplane. And then they kind of mastered in the Naked Gun series. When I think of this film, though, I always think of Frank Drebin on the field at the baseball game when he commandeers the position of the umpire and strike and all that kind of stuff. So much so that a couple of years back, me and my friend John, we were on holiday in New York and we went to a New York Yankees game. And every time there was a strikeout, we just started doing Frank Drebin, strike. And of course, the New York Yankees fans we were surrounded by did not like us.
No.
The two idiotic Englishmen who were fucking about. But that kind of, it shows you how important that film is, that it's, what, 30 years old? And John and I were doing catchphrases from it in the middle of a Yankees game.
Let's be honest, it's the silliest film ever made, but silly in a good way, not over the top where you're just not finding it funny. It's the right level of silliness. And I think it's probably one of my favourite comedies of all time.
Yeah.
And that's a huge statement. And even O.J. Simpson is good in it.
It's
true, though.
Is,
with his big afro, and he's just very, very funny. Yeah. And I think the music, the iconic theme tune is so good. But like you said, Leslie Nielsen is just the funniest motherfucker around. And when you mentioned the topic, Ben, the first thing I thought of straight away was, which one do I pick of these?
Yeah.
I was kind of scratching my head. And if we hadn't have all had the Naked Gun, I probably didn't know you as well as I thought.
Yeah, he is the king of that because he has this ability to commit wholeheartedly to the silliest bits with absolute sincerity.
Yeah.
What about when he parks his car into the garbage cans and then the airbags go off? So his car starts rolling away and he immediately thinks it's someone hijacking a car. He doesn't even recognise it's his own car. It's like, pow, 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 stop, stop in the name of the law.
I do miss him, I'll be honest. He's such a good, like you said, he does everything well and puts his heart into it, and that's a big thing because a lot of people could just be stupid, like Stifler, we always pick on him, but he doesn't do a good performance of a stupid character where Leslie does. Sorry, I've mentioned Stifler and Leslie.
Sean William Scott always gets the shitty end of the stick from
Stifler
us.
Stifler this, Stifler
I like that. It, I like him, he's good in Role Models. That's what I want to say about
for
Sean
the rest
William
of the
Scott.
Episode I won't pick on Stifler. I promise.
We've got to go back to Gemma,
Sorry, guys. This one's a bit of a no-brainer for me, and I know we've talked about it hundreds of times, but again, this is the perfect parody film. This is Spinal Tap.
I've got it too.
Yay!
I haven't.
Boo hiss. It just shows what life is like on the road with a band in the 1980s. And the funny thing was, this was pretty much the reality of what was going on with the musical groups. It never takes itself seriously. It's got some of the best characters known to cinema comedy. And where else are you going to watch a film where a band member goes through an airport security and he's got a big cucumber stuffed down his pants covered in tinfoil? Ben, take it away, because I know you love this more than me too.
Oh, God. I mean, it was one of the first mockumentaries, wasn't it? And it's certainly the most famous one, because it's about this fictional heavy metal band dealing with the daily indignities of life on the road. It's one of the funniest films, but it's also really accurate, as you've kind of mentioned.
Hell
there.
Yeah.
There have been bands over the years like Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, Metallica, Aerosmith have all said that it just hits too close to home. Some bands struggle to watch it because they're like, I don't see what's funny about this. Yeah. This is just our life. But I think that's a sign of how great a parody it was as well, because the greater public didn't realise it was a mockumentary at first. It wasn't particularly successful on its initial run because people thought it was just a documentary about a shit metal band they'd never heard of.
you know what? That was exactly my first thoughts when I first watched this. I didn't have any clue about what a parody was. I must have watched this when I was about 8, 9 years old. My dad loved it, so we watched it together. And I genuinely thought this was real life. I thought, well, do people act like this in the music business? Fast forward to a few more years, it's all a piss take. And my God, what a piss take it is.
It's absolutely amazing. And one of the reasons why it feels so real is because almost all of the dialogue is improvised by the cast, Harry Shearer, Michael McKean, Christopher Guest, and Rob Reiner, who was the director as well. Because they're all seasoned improvisers, everything seems natural, even absurd conversations about choking on vomit and then you can't dust for vomit and all that kind of stuff. It just seems real, you know, and shit sandwich and all that.
Oh, two words.
Because it's all just, you know, coming out there and then. It's so brilliantly done and it's been often imitated but never matched.
Yeah, they've done a few more films since, obviously, Spinal Tap's. We had Best in Show, A Mighty Wind.
Both great films.
Indeed.
I remember when we did this as a rewatch and I said, oh, I'll definitely go and check them out. I still haven't, surprisingly, but they're films that I saw come through on social media, Best in Show, and I really need to get on it.
Wonderful.
Best in Show is amazing. There was another one that they did, which is kind of the least known of Christopher Guest's films, called Waiting for Guffman, where he plays this kind of amateur dramatics teacher, and it's again, it's really, really funny.
Didn't they do one a few years ago for your consideration with Ricky Gervais?
Yeah, I don't think that one was improvised as much. I think that one had more of a script, and it wasn't great.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, I'd forget that one.
Lick my love pump. Still my favourite moment of that film. It's so sincere. Lick my love pump.
I love the guy's name. Was it Artie Fufkin? It's just that name. Like, I can hear that name over and over again. It'll still make me giggle.
Oh, that's sexist. What's wrong with being sexy? No, sexist.
We could quote this for the whole of this episode.
All day.
All the time.
So it's your turn, Mark.
I'm going with the 1987 classic from Mel Brooks, Spaceballs.
Wow.
Ooh. A very, very good film. A complete piss take of Star Wars. And when you think of the cast, you've got Mel Brooks directing, you've got John Candy, and you've got Rick Moranis.
Amazing.
A guy that we've talked about who should still be around, but for some reason we never see on screen anymore. Mm. Again, John Candy, one of my missed actors, I think, of all time.
Absolutely.
Such a comedy legend. Mel Brooks knows how to deliver a spoof. He's done many, and maybe one of us will mention another soon, but I think this is one of my favourite personally. I love the characters. I love everything about it. Rick Moranis as Lord Helmet, as this kind of complete opposite to Darth Vader, makes me piss myself. He's short. He's got this ridiculously sized helmet. He's always walking around moping around and having hissy fits and playing with his toys. It's so, so good. And when I watched this again this week for research, I sat there and thought, I bet there's not many films where the cast has had as much fun as this.
Yeah,
you can see that they're all in it for the long run and they're having a lot of fun. They're going all out. Again, like we said about Leslie, no one there is caring about their character too much. They're just going with it, having a laugh. I reckon a lot of it was improvised as well. You can see some of this stuff, and I can imagine that kind of Mel Brooks lets his cast do what the hell he wants as long as they get a good performance. My favourite scenes are stuff like Pizza the Hut, which I think is absolutely brilliant. The whole alien diner scene with John Hurt, who's a fucking awesome actor, again. Yogurt the Yoda clone is incredible. And my favourite part is the Planet the Apes sequence, which is just fantastic. What I didn't realise watching it again is when they accidentally capture the stunt doubles, you just see these stunt doubles that have been hired and they get caught. And you just think, you know that didn't happen. Mel Brooks did not write that in. They just did it and went, do you know what? Keep it in. You can just tell from the character reactions. It's one of my favourite spoofs. I think it's probably one of my most watched films as a kid. And it's just genius. And I'm so glad that kind of George Lucas didn't sue the shit out of him. Which he does a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd be happy with it. You know, if Mel Brooks is taking an interest in you, you're going to be happy with that.
Yeah.
Because Mel Brooks is a genius within this art form. You know, the amount of clever spoofs, even things like The Producers, and I usually don't really care for musicals, as you well know, but The Producers is amazing.
I've not seen that.
Really good.
I've not got around to watching it.
Cool. Gemma, it's back to you again. We're flying through it.
I know. We got one last one from me. And it's a little bit more modern than the other ones that we've just talked about. It's Team America World Police.
Oh!
America! Fuck yes!
Oh, God, we sounded so good then.
I know.
The harmonies.
Yeah.
Did you notice as well? I've got to say this now before I forget. Someone this week tweeted that Ben had a beautiful singing voice.
I do, yeah.
This is true. They listened to an old episode where he's singing. So I reckon this year we should try and put out an album.
I've got the voice of an angel.
Yeah.
I'm like Susan Boyle or something.
But I do. I want to see Ben's album come out.
I'm down for this.
And we'll call it like Radiohead, The Bens.
Oh.
That would be pretty nice.
All the hits. Singing all the hits.
Stay tuned for that. Back to Gemma.
Back to me. So this film is directed by Trey Parker of South Park fame, and it stars his Bezzy mate Matt Stone as some of the voices in it. So it's about an elite counter-terrorism organisation who enlist a Broadway actor to rid the world of Kim Jong-il. Now, he's dead now, obviously. So this was filmed a few number of years ago. But I love this film because it's my favourite marionette-based film ever.
Oh, because it's a long list.
Oh, yeah. You know, top of the list all the time. It's just silly. You know, it parodies the whole war terrorist genre in movies, and it sends it up to the nth degree, too. It even enlists topical subjects about the uneasiness between America and North Korea and how certain actors tend to get too involved when the cause is completely lost on them. You know, they it's almost like feeding egos for people to go, oh, that guy's a really good guy. Nah, not really. He just wants a bit of the love and the money.
People like Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
That's what started it all, and that all I heard for months, wasn't it? Just people walking around, Matt Damon. Poor guy, he must be furious.
I don't know. But it's great. It's just stupid. It's sexualized. It's disgusting. The whole bit when Gary is puking up in the streets, what seems like for 10 minutes solid. I mean, that boy went through a lot of minestrone soup just to hack that out of his lungs. Everything about it shouldn't work, but it really does.
The sex scene that's way too long.
When you say it's sexualized, the sex scene between two marionettes that are just banging into each other, just bang, bang.
The thing is, brilliant. You think it's going to stop.
Yeah.
And it's no exaggeration, it's 5 minutes. It is. Yeah. And that's a long time when you're watching a scene and they just keep going and going from behind in all these different positions. Yeah. It's a bit arousing.
You got word. They had word. Everybody had word.
I think one of my favourite bits is when the guy goes to go undercover as like an Arab gentleman and he goes in under intensive makeup and all they do is make him slightly brown and stick a little patchy beard on him.
Pop like a towel on his head like they've just got out of the shower.
So good.
And then he just says, doka doka. That's it.
Muhammad Jihad. Really, seriously. But Matt Stone and Trey Parker are, they have such a golden touch with things. South Park is still going ahead.
Yeah.
After all of these years, this was a really great big success. They've even ventured into the world of musical theatre with the Book of Mormon, which is fantastic.
Still not seen it.
Please do. It's so funny. It's as funny as you could possibly ever imagine it to be. And I think give it about 2-3 years, that's going to be made into a musical film.
Oh,
I would actually watch that.
Yeah, oh, it's great.
They
it's
are
so
geniuses.
Good.
Did they do basketball?
Yeah. They did, and Orgasmo.
It isn't quite genius, that
one.
No,
but it's still
fun.
A good fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an easy switch off. I can't be asked to watch anything entertaining today.
Hearty
this will
laugh.
Do. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Can't be asked to watch anything entertaining. Yeah. So I'll watch something that doesn't entertain me.
Yeah, I just don't want to have to think.
You don't want the commitments.
No.
No.
Forget that. Ah, we're on our final choice.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And I'm going back to the Mel Brooks well. I'm going to 1974's Blazing Saddles.
Yes!
Badges? We don't need no stinking badges. It's his classic Western spoof starring Gene Wilder as an alcoholic gunslinger and Cleavon Little as the black sheriff of a very white and very racist 1870s Old West town. The film is gloriously, uproariously un-PC.
Oh, massively.
Just a bit.
Yeah. The jokes are highly offensive by the standards of our current outrage culture. We live in a world now where millennials are getting upset because they're seeing Friends for the first time on Netflix and saying that Friends is offensive.
Yeah.
Oh, bore
Friends!
Off.
Yes. It's the most... I love Friends, don't get me wrong, but it's the most bland, anodyne, inoffensive show that's ever been made.
Yeah.
But millennials are up in arms about it, apparently, for fuck's sake. So I'd love to show one of these little twats Blazing Saddles and watch their little heads explode. But anyone with a sense of humour can see beyond the vulgarity and the liberal use of the N-word and stuff like that to see that it's a satire. And it's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Above and beyond everything else. One of the interesting things is Cleavon Little as Sheriff Bart, he's great, but one can't help but wonder what the film would have been like if the original star would have been in that role, which was Richard Pryor.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so Richard Pryor co-wrote this film with Mel Brooks, but the studio weren't willing to hire him because they said no one will insure him because he's a drug addict and he's always getting arrested. So they had to go and hire this other guy, Cleavon Little, who was great, but Pryor
would have taken
it into the stratosphere.
You talk about those millennials' little heads exploding. I think mine's about to pop off because that shit sounds incredible.
And we'll never see it.
I know, it's a shame. And you mentioned there, Mark, the bit in Spaceballs where you see the stunt performance.
Yeah.
I suspect that was intentional because it reminds me of something that happens in Blazing Saddles. It's one of the best bits of fourth wall breaking ever. So there's this big climactic battle scene at the end of the film, and then they just kind of accidentally, or, you know, seemingly accidentally, wander onto a completely different film set where there's like a 1930s song and dance film being
like
made.
Like an all-male troupe.
Yeah, and then they bundle out onto the streets of Burbank in California where the film's being made, and then they go into a cinema where the film's being shown. It's incredibly meta.
Very meta.
Yeah, before meta existed, essentially. And yeah, it's just a laugh riot from start to finish.
That's it. Put up your hands, stick out your tush.
I've not seen it for years, and I remember it causing a lot of outrage because everyone, oh, it's racist. No, it's funny.
Yeah.
He's probably the least offensive person you'll ever meet if you met him. He's the nicest guy ever. Mm-hmm. When you see his speeches he does on awards, he's sincere. He's an old man. He doesn't want to cause anyone upset.
Yeah. I don't want to get into a whole spiel here, but just using racist terminology isn't necessarily in and of itself racist. It depends how you're using it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the racist characters who say awful things to Sheriff Bart, they eventually come to love him because they realise he's a great person and they realise the error of their ways.
Yeah.
So just because they use the N-word, you don't go, oh, I can't watch this film because they use the N-word. Well, you need to actually understand why they've used it and why they then come to regret it. You know,
I'm not.
To be honest, if you want a rant sort of around this kind of taking offence, just watch the latest Ricky Gervais special on Netflix, because he'll do it better than I ever could.
Yeah, I'm loving that, by the way. I watched it 3 times and we all went to see it.
We did.
Have you seen as well that he's now going to be doing another one very soon, because all Netflix has already gone, we'll give you the same money, go out there, and he's just using dickheads on Twitter that are getting offended by him as material.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And you know what that means, don't you? Skip trip.
Yeah.
This will go really nicely next to your choice, Ben. My final choice is Young Frankenstein.
Well done.
Excellent.
We've had a massive Mel Brooks special today. This film is incredible. I think it's from 1974 as well, so he's had a busy, busy time. Gene Wilder, one of the best people in the world, and again, we miss him greatly. We always remember him as Willy Wonka, but I love him as Frederick Frankenstein in this. But I think Marty Feldman, and that's no relation to Corey.
Might be.
As Igor... This character is incredible, and I remember watching this at uni with my mate Stu, and he invited me over, and he's the guy that got me into stuff like Spaced and stuff, so he's like my kind of go-to guy, my Yoda. And I got to his house, and he put it on, and as soon as I saw him with this little kind of cloak around his head and his eyes that are completely bossed, aren't they, at all times, they're really bulging and crossed, I couldn't stop laughing, and he hadn't even said anything at this time, but it reminded me of kind of Monty Python humour. I thought it was really kind of laugh out loud. Gene Wilder is absolutely incredible. And again, you've seen the writing from Mel Brooks. It's just stupid. It's silly. It's a complete homage and take the piss of the seriousness of kind of the real Frankenstein. He goes on this search to find his late relatives. And I just sit there and laugh for the whole hour and a half. It's absolutely awesome. But my favourite scene is Gene Hickman's cameo, who I think is one of the best. And if you look at the cinema history, is one of my favourite ever sequences is when he comes and encounters the monster. I think he's absolutely awesome, but the cast, the writing, everything. This guy's a genius. Let's do a Mel Brooks special.
I think we just have.
Yeah, this is our official masturbate over him, because he is the greatest.
And it's funny, because I don't think we've ever mentioned him before. 93 episodes in, his name I don't think has ever come up.
And now
we've had 3 of his films out of 9 picks. It's crazy.
Nice, isn't it?
But I must admit, I've not seen this one.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Ooh!
Yeah.
I think we should, like, genuinely, and I know we always say this, but we should sit around one day and watch it with a beer.
Yeah, big time.
Down for that.
Oh, you don't need to contribute then, but when you have watched it, let us know.
We'll do.
It's fucking awesome. And I don't need to try and sell it like The Descent 2. You will actually invest time in this, because it's Mel Brooks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, this is being fun. Is that it?
Well, that's it from me.
Wow.
But
this
is
very good.
Well, we do have our listeners.
Oh, brilliant. What have they come up with?
Well.
Don't read them all out, because there's about 150,000.
Oh, no. Oh, I better delete these pages. I've got a few, and I think you guys are going to like them. So first, we're going to go to Twitter. J@green.emo said, Hot Shots Part 2.
Oh, that was about fourth or fifth for me.
Yeah. Scary Movie 3.
What?
Yeah,
I would take Scary Movie 1, but why 3?
I don't know, that might have been a typo.
Ben, Jane and Silent Bob are in it.
Oh.
That might have been a typo.
That would be why then.
And the third choice was Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
That's a great film.
And that's Mel Brooks, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Men in Tights. So good. Hal at the Bozdog said Blazing Saddles, of course. Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I genuinely thought one of you guys would have had a Monty Python.
I don't know, because to me, they're their own genre. They're not a spoof of anything. They're just the Pythons doing their thing.
Mm. Their third choice was Galaxy Quest.
Oh,
great film.
Super.
Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
Like, we're missing a lot of people today. It's sad.
This really sucks. Life Just Ordinary at Kazikaz said Robin Hood, Men in Tights, The Princess Bride.
I don't really see that as a spoof, know. Really. But
it's just a comedy fantasy film, isn't it?
But the third choice was Team America.
Brilliant choice. Lovely.
Fuck yeah. Gary Azzaro at Gazzaro said Airplane.
I'm amazed we didn't have Airplane between us.
Very amazed.
Can we just all agree that that is our number one?
Yeah.
It's the ultimate.
Right here. This is the real one. Yeah. It's the real quiz. Fear of a Black Cat. I'll admit, I've not heard of that.
No. I thought that was like someone's Twitter handle.
No.
Yeah, I did. I was like, yeah, what they said.
Fear of a Black Cat said. And Gary's third choice was, of course, This is Spinal Tap.
Yeah. Brilliant. Mm.
Then we're going to move to Facebook. John Isherwood said, Repossessed.
Repossessed. Is that him as well?
Leslie.
Yeah, there he is. Odd Nielsen. Scary Movie, the first one.
Good film.
That's more like it.
Yeah.
And The Naked Gun, of course. Erica Bean said, Scream. Now, I can see why, because it's kind of a parody.
Yeah, it is.
Kind of a parody, but not... Not on the... No, it's not.
Just a postmodern horror.
Yeah.
That's worded much better than I was trying to. This is Spinal Tap and Starship Troopers. Again, that's satire, isn't it?
It's a satire, not a spoof. Mm.
Then we're going to move to Instagram. Jessica_Louise89 said, Galaxy Quest, What We Do in the Shadows.
That's kind of knocking on the spoof door.
And Shaun of the Dead, this is where you had all the people
I'm not even going to comment because it'll just get uproar.
Yeah, it's an homage for me.
Yeah.
Then finally, Lois Alexander 84 said, The Naked Gun, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, and Mars Attacks.
Brilliant.
Yeah, good film.
Absolutely awesome.
Yeah. Ack.
God, this has been short and snappy, but I bloody loved it.
Exactly, so keep them coming next time.
It's my turn for the next topic,
guys. Oh, is it?
Hello.
What have we got?
Thinking about this one for quite a while. So, only a few episodes ago, guys, we were looking at our worst ever on-screen chemistry, and I had a lot of fun with that. But I thought it's about time we kind of flip it and look at the best ever on-screen chemistry. So I think the best way we can kind of highlight that and kind of get a topic out of it is to come back with our top three romantic on-screen couples.
Ooh!
Welcome to the rebellion. Wait.
We've been to see Ready Player One, the latest film directed by Steven Spielberg, based on the novel by Ernest Cline. The year is 2045, with the world on the brink of chaos and collapse, but the people have found salvation in the Oasis, an expansive virtual reality universe created by James Halliday. When Halliday dies, he leaves his immense fortune to the first person to find a digital Easter egg that he has hidden somewhere in the Oasis, sparking a contest that grips the entire world. Now, this is a huge film, and I'm hoping that most people have seen it by now. But if you haven't, in typical skip-to-the-end tradition, we will be spoiling it and talking about many parts of the plot. So please, turn it off now, go and see the film, and come back. And we make it even easier for you by putting the times on the episode so you don't get spoiled. So stop moaning online, we've put it out there for you.
We're really nice, aren't we?
I'm going to throw this straight to Ben, and I'm... quite nervous right now on what we're all going to think, but tell me what you thought of this huge sci-fi release.
No. I'm throwing it back on you.
No!
Yeah, no, because this is the one, I had Blade Runner 2049, the ones that we've all been waiting for.
Yeah.
This was the big one for you.
I think that's
you, fair. You loved the book. It blew you away, didn't it? And not a day goes past in the last couple of years that you've not mentioned this film coming up. So I want to know your thoughts first, Marky Boy. So I'm throwing it on you.
I absolutely loved it, and I had a huge blast at the cinema. Sitting there with you three, with the 3D glasses, and seeing this visual absolute treat was unbelievable. Spielberg doing what he does best. It felt like lying there and just going through a big toy box of nostalgia. It was incredible, but there were so many things wrong with it at times that it pissed me off.
Yeah.
And because I love the book so much, and it's my most read book, and... probably one of my favourite books of all time. There was a few things that really pissed me off and annoyed me. But apart from that, I did have a blast and I had a lot of fun. And I don't want to be that person like the Harry Potter readers that was, oh, the books are always better. I can't enjoy the film. I enjoyed it. I really did. I had so much fun. But it's not perfect. And I'm a bit like, oh, I wanted to like it more.
Do you know what? I echo every single word you've just said. That's exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great fun, but it's not a great film.
No.
And there are a lot of changes from the book, some of which worked, a lot of which didn't. So it didn't really hang together completely for me. It was fun. I enjoyed it. But a bit of a letdown.
Yeah.
Right, so I haven't read the book, so I'm going into this review with a bit of a different perspective. And I echo everything you guys have just said too. It's great to look at. The visuals are fantastic. It's a little bit of a thrill ride, but there's too many flaws to concentrate on to kind of let it pass as a really great sort of 21st century modern classic, because I don't think it is. There's some bits that are great. I mean, there's going to be one section I'm probably going to be, let's just say, grab a mop, boys, because... This girl's going to Jizz Town.
And I sat Gemma. By in the cinema.
Yeah. Jizz Town. Yeah. Come on now.
I know.
Population? Mwah.
You're vile.
But yeah, what you guys said.
It was spectacular. It really yes. was. And we all invested in the extra for 3D.
Yeah.
And I've seen Gravity, I've seen Avatar, and they're the films that I was like, wow. But for me, this is probably the best thing I've seen at the cinema in 3D. I was so glad we didn't just go for the normal standard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was so much fun, and I think the animation was perfect. It was seamless, and to combine reality and the animation isn't something that's easy, and to see Spielberg do it so well was brilliant. And I kind of wish I hadn't read the book, because I was just going, oh, they've changed the whole start. This isn't meant to be like this. Oh, they've changed massive characters. Hang on a minute. This whole task is completely different.
Yeah.
Why are they going here? Hang on, who's this character? Mm-hmm. What? It was a bit like, oh, I couldn't switch it off. I couldn't yeah. turn it off, and I needed to enjoy it more.
I'm with you. We'll come to the differences between the film and the book in a bit, but sticking with the graphics and the CGI and so on. Yes, they were great. They were flawless, but I didn't enjoy the scenes that were set in the Oasis, the virtual reality world, anywhere near as much as I enjoyed the scenes that were out of it. When we were dealing with the real actors, when we were dealing with Ty Sheridan and Olivia Cooke, I was thoroughly invested. But as soon as we went into the Oasis and we were looking at their avatars, I stopped caring.
Yes.
Because they just looked... As well animated as they were, they didn't look like humans, so I couldn't relate to them as people. I just stopped yeah. caring as much. As soon as they came out of it and they were in the real world, I was like, oh, great, I'm into it again. So I just, there was too much in the CGI world for me.
That's exactly what I've got down here. I yeah. couldn't connect properly with them. So when they were on the screen, and yeah, I believed their sort of love story coming together. But as soon as they were the avatars, I couldn't get that connection back yeah. again. So hence why I know Ty Sheridan, he's a great actor. We've seen him in some really good stuff in the past, but I thought he was okay in this. And I think it's because of the avatar's constant appearances.
Yeah.
It detracted my attention to his performance.
Yeah.
He was kind of underused. We never got
massively,
enough of him because
absolutely.
We only see him putting on the headset yeah. every now and then in a caravan. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about it, that's all he's doing.
I kind of wish that they'd visualised the Oasis differently, that it didn't have to look like a computer game.
Yeah.
It could have been a virtual world where everything was still real actors and real set. I mean, you could still have had CGI sets, but they should have had real actors
yeah.
within there. Mm. They could have given him a fancy haircut and fancier clothes or something,
yeah.
so he looked different to his real world counterpart. But the kind of computer animation version of him, I just didn't give a shit.
Oh, I hated the computer animated version of him.
It was terrible.
He looked like such an emo fuckboy.
Yeah,
fuckboy. Christ. It reminded me of the Final Fantasy
yes!
Anime kind of series that they did. Mm. And it's very different, isn't it? It's such. I liked it. I thought it worked. But again, you're either going to love it or hate it. You're not just going to be on the fence. It's a very weird-looking, unique kind of visual.
Mm-hmm.
And Spielberg's done very well because he's created a whole world. And I think at times I was left kind of breathless going, oh my God, like
yeah.
the action
yeah.
and everything. And I think on that note, let's talk about how we kind of got into the film. So we're sat there in the cinema and straight away the whole mission for the Copper Key is thrown at you.
Yeah.
We have this race where, for me, I was jizzing straight away. I saw the DeLorean.
Can we
no jizz.
No more jizz, please.
Okay.
That's
if you
two.
Thought I wasn't going to say jizz, reviewing Ready Player One.
Yeah. We've had two jizzes already.
Okay,
that's
spaff.
Enough for the day.
Okay. So, but let's be honest, this race was unbelievable. It felt like watching a huge version of Mario Kart with
yeah.
your favourite
yeah.
nostalgia vehicles. We had King Kong, we had T-Rex, we had lots of little references. I think we had Chucky at one point.
Yeah.
We had them all, and it was... I was at that point like, oh my God, we're in for a hell of a ride. No pun intended, we are. We are sitting here having our tits blown off for 10 minutes. That race was incredible.
Yeah,
it was.
It was great and it was spectacular and it was a really fun way to drag you into the film. And Gemma, I know you haven't read the book, so we won't belabor this too much.
Yeah.
But that was one of the first major differences from the book. So in the book, the Copper Key, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, you've read it more times than I have, but it was kind of like a Dungeons and Dragons mission in the book, isn't it?
It is. It's
the
Tomb
key.
Of Horrors yeah. whole mission. Completely different.
And in this instance, I happen to think that the film was better than the book. As great as that is in the book, I don't think a Dungeons and Dragons mission action on film would have been particularly interesting.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
I think he needed to create something that had a visual pow to it. Yeah. And this as you put it, Mark, this kind of Mario Kart-esque yeah. race had more kick yeah. than a Dungeons & Dragons mission would. So I think this was a good choice.
Yeah, you need to grab them by the knackers, don't you? Just like get that person's attention straight away. And when you're seeing Artemis ride the motorbike from Akira, then yeah. you see Lara Croft in a car next to her, it really did sort of get you going. And of course, when you revisit it again, when Puzzleville, when he cracks
Puzzleville.
When he cracks the code on how to get the key, and you see him kind of go reverse and
yeah.
sort of cheat his way into, well, not cheat his way, but he's found the special way into getting that key. I thought it was great to revisit that again.
Yeah, and I think King Kong looked absolutely fantastic.
God, yes.
When he's punching on this transparent truck above him, he looks such a threat, and the CGI yeah. was flawless. There was not one bit where I thought, and I know it can be because it's like a video game, but I thought it reminded me of Wreck-It Ralph, when I'm just sitting there going, this is absolutely awesome, and this is the action and entertainment I want. In the book, it was kind of set on the whole War Games feel and all that. Very, very different. Like Ben said, Dungeons and Dragons I don't think would have worked. I think it would have been a bit like, what? This is lame.
Yeah.
Especially to grab your attention. So fair play for Spielberg being brave enough to change it. And I'm sure Ernest has sat there with him going, yep, I'm cool with that. It's still very 80s and nostalgic, but very, very different. And at that point, I'm like, oh my God, there's going to be a lot of changes in this.
And the biggest change for me that I didn't like is with the character of Nolan Sorrento. So in the film, he's played by Ben Mendelsohn, and I love Ben Mendelsohn. In the book, Sorrento is a really sinister motherfucker. So if a year ago, whenever it was, when they cast Ben Mendelsohn, I'm thinking, perfect.
Yeah.
Because he does sinister so well. But in the film, they've made him a bit of a comedy character. Mm-hmm. He's a bit of a figure of fun, which is not how he is in the book. They should have lent into Mendelsohn's skill set and replicated how he was in the book. But Spielberg has... I'm going off on a slight tangent, but we've had this conversation before about how I like Spielberg's adult movies, but I don't like his kids' movies because he can be too sentimental and a bit too kiddie, a bit too childish. And he's gone too far that way in this film, I think, and that's why he's softened the character of Sorrento rather than letting him be the dick he was in the books.
Yeah.
I got that impression. And from the ending to, well, the scenes that move towards the ending of the film, I get a sense that he's trying to capture the feel of when you've watched E.T. for the first time. Mm. You know, that whole, the film that defines a generation for people. I do believe he's tried it with this film. And unfortunately for me, not just the character of Sorrento and obviously what happens at the end, it gets to a kind of a schmaltzy territory that I like schmaltz. You know, I'm a schmuck for schmaltz. But sometimes it gets a little bit too saccharine for my liking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the perfect word, saccharine.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know what that word means, but yeah.
It's very, very sweet.
Yes. Oh,
right. Like this nice brother's cider.
Oh, look at that.
Rhubarb and custard.
Seamless pluggage.
You're right though, Ben. He's like an over-the-top businessman who's that annoying kind of accountant. Like, hey, I'm the bad guy. Didn't work for me. And that was not my biggest gripe, but a big, big gripe. Now let's talk about the second challenge, which is a Blade Runner machine on the old book. But Gemma, this is the bit where I kind of thought, oh my God, have I spilt my Coke on the floor? It's a bit wet down here.
That was me.
Yeah, we were ankle deep in lady juice.
I'm going to throw this straight to you. As a filmmaker, I don't think you touch anywhere near Kubrick's work. You stay away. Yeah. I think it's a dangerous territory. But I will say this right now. My God, Spielberg, you fucking nailed it. And I think he would be proud right now to see how you've done this kind of homage to The Shining. Gemma, talk how you gushed and gushed.
Right, okay, so after I was spent, I decided to watch this scene. As soon as you see the little rectangle with the poster of The Shining come up, I think I looked at you, Mark, and I went, no.
Yeah.
And we're transported into the world of The Shining. We go into the Overlook Hotel. And what is absolutely wonderful about this whole section is we get the original score. We're in the actual location. So this is film footage lifted from the original film. We go into the room 237 with that beautiful lady who turns into this absolutely crazy-ass banshee witch monster. And there's a little bit of humour used throughout the whole section. When Ake goes into the elevator and starts pressing it, they're like, no, don't do it! And of course, we know the blood comes out gushing, kind of like when I'm going to stop there.
Yeah.
But it is just...
Gush cast.
And we see 8 go into room 237.
There is no room 237. Sometimes
complaints will be false. Get their attention.
It's great, though. it's as if you're going into the film itself and you're trying to do things your way. I thought it was a wonderful homage. Everything was used perfectly. Yeah, even when they stumble into the hedge maze in the snow and they've got Jack chasing them around with an axe. Then the old lady from Room 237 morphs into this crazy giant monster and swings this axe as well.
Incredible.
It's the best scene in the film.
I loved it.
It's a masterstroke. And the interesting thing is, when this premiered at the South by Southwest Festival, apparently it was very divisive with the crowd. Half the crowd were like, wow, that was cool. And the other half were like, sacrilege. How dare he try and do, you know. But I thought it was fantastic. I thought it worked on every level.
It was a ballsy move. And
the
it
music and everything, all the carpet detail. Mm-hmm. And I was just sat the there like, I need to see this again. Yeah. Oh, all of it was spot on.
Even when you find out how they need to achieve that key. I thought that was a really nice extended touch regarding the photograph that we see at the end of The Shining. I thought it was a real cool touch.
Yeah, I loved it.
I thought it was amazing. Let's talk about some of the actors now. We've not really touched on that. My favourite person in the entire film was Olivia Cooke.
Mine too, and I'm absolutely in love with her.
Yeah, I thought she was brilliant. I don't think I've ever seen her in anything before. I don't recognise her from anything.
She's been in Me, Earl and the Dying Girl.
Oh, yes, yes. I've heard good things about that, but I've never got around to watching. Yeah, she's the Dying Girl. Gotcha. But I thought she was absolutely brilliant. I thought she was really emotive. You believed everything she was saying, every emotion she was feeling, and I want to see more of her. I thought she was fantastic.
She can tell a story through her eyes.
Yes. She's gorgeous as well, and I do believe she could be like the next Emma Stone. I honestly believe she could. She's absolutely fantastic. I was blown away. Since I've been researching what else she's been in, there's not a lot, so I'm hoping that they get her involved in some big stuff. She doesn't just do like chick flicks or teen films now. Yeah. She needs to go off and have a big career, because I absolutely love her, genuinely. Best thing in the whole film by a mile, and that's against people like Simon Pegg and the one and only Mark Rylance.
Oh. You know. Mark who?
Rylance.
Nope.
Rylance.
Correct.
Well done.
I was going to say I thought he was shit in this film. I don't think he was shit. That's not true at all. I'm just sick of Mark Rylance's whole shtick. He just plays doddery old men in everything. He always seems like he's on the brink of Alzheimer's in everything, and I'm just sick of that. He plays one note over and over again. He's very good at it, and he wins awards for it, but it's every fucking film.
He kind of reminded me of Garth from Wayne's World. It's like, you know, man. Oh, so
they just picked him up from the boat on Dunkirk, stuck him straight in here with a wig. He's good, but you are right. And
he does that same mumbly voice, always.
Not great in this.
Had enough of him.
Simon Pegg, though, I thought was great. And it was really, really cool to see him on screen. And I bet he had an absolute blast, because he is one of us. He's a nerd. He loves 80s films. And let's be honest, he was probably a huge fan of the book. So when old matey Stephen rung him up, went, do you want to be in it? I bet you just ripped their hand off.
Yeah, and I was worried as well, because we saw very little of him throughout most of the film. And I'm thinking, shit, they've massively reduced the role of his character Og from the book. But then, as it turns out, he was the museum curator all the way through, and then he has a big role at the end of the film. So I was glad that he came back around, because I thought they were wasting him.
I thought his end scene was wonderful. He can really act and really sort of prove his chops time to time. And I just thought that whole sequence when he was remembering his friend and his wife, you saw the tears in his eyes. I thought it was played beautifully.
There's a bit that really annoyed me.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Go on.
So I'm a big fan of the book, and I love the good guy's robot at the end. I absolutely loved it. And they've replaced him with the Iron Giant.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe it's licensing, but considering they've gone for every other character you can ever name, I can't imagine they've gone, oh, we're not going to spend the extra money on that.
Well, I wouldn't have thought so, because they had everything else. They had Star Wars, RoboCop, Nintendo and things, Sega things, everything you could think
Halo
of.
Halo looked ace.
I take your point. Yeah. It seems like an unnecessary change, but I enjoyed the battles between the Iron Giant and the Mechagodzilla and all that kind of stuff.
I thought that was so cool.
Spectacular on screen.
That's what Jurassic World should have done. That's on a scale of a fight. It's true, though. I actually felt it was a genuine fight on screen, where it wasn't just too much CGI, and it is CGI. Mm-hmm.
The film was 2.5 hours long, I think, there or thereabouts. And even though I have faults with it, I thought it flew by, and I actually wouldn't mind if it would have been a bit longer, because I think it could have spent some more time on character development and actually fleshing out the hunt for the Easter egg. I don't think the hunt was shown enough. There wasn't enough of the actual adventure side of it.
It felt like they found it by a fluke.
Yeah.
It was just, okay, this is what we need to do. Oh, we found it. Great, there's the key. Next bit.
Yeah.
And then you got like empty space in between.
It was like, you know, we've got the first one. 6 months have passed. Here's the second one. Well, where's the hunt? Where's the adventure?
Mm. Good point. And let's give a shout out to Birmingham. A lot of that was filmed in Birmingham. Yeah, I was like, wow.
Filmed in Digbeth, there we go. Places.
Big up Digbeth.
One thing I want to do, though, I do want to buy it again when it comes out on Blu-ray, and I want to kind of like each frame look at all the different stuff in the background, because there's so much going on, and we must have missed so many little Easter eggs and characters in the background. There's so much.
I think it was on Vulture.com, some enterprising journalist on there has done a list of every pop culture reference they could see or hear, and I've asked people in the comments to add more that they've missed, so have a look for that.
Wow.
Need to do this.
And I have downloaded the soundtrack since I've been home as well. Amazing. It's an 80s, you know, for me. It's
of course.
Basically my CD collection. Should we wrap it up then, guys?
Yeah.
Come on then, Ben, give us your score.
It felt a bit lightweight and frothy for me for a modern era Spielberg film. I think in the last 10 years or so, he's been doing a lot of mature fare, starting perhaps going back as far as Munich, and then recently, you know, he's been doing things like The Post and Bridge of Spies and stuff. So for him to go back and do his 80s style kids films, I get it, I get why he's done it, but it's a bit too frothy for me. But it was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun. So I'm going to give it a 7.
That's good.
I'm also going to give it a 7. It's a thrill ride. It's not the best thrill ride in the world. It's certainly not the Wicker Man in Alton Towers.
No.
Which we want tickets,
Alton
by the
Towers.
Way. Yeah, if you're listening.
They didn't even answer us on Twitter. Wankers. Oh, no, that's not how we get free tickets. Beautiful people. Beautiful people.
Wankers.
Beautiful people.
But back to my point, I'm giving it a 7 out of 10.
It's an 8 from me because I had such fun. It was a blast. The 3D was great. The animation was great. I did enjoy it. I don't want to be too harsh. So I think overall, it's fair to say that Ready Player One gets a skip to the end, 7 out of 10. It's competition time! So if you listened to our last episode, which I hope you did, you'd have seen that we got so many prizes to give away. It's getting quite tiring now because we have to bring them all here and read them all out. And there's just so, so many. But the good news is we've got even more this time round. But let's announce the winners from the last episode. Kicking things off, we had a Tomb Raider bundle from our friends at Warner Brothers. And to win this bundle, which had a hoodie, a t-shirt, a phone case, the works, it had everything. It was such a simple question. Who plays Lara Croft in the brand new Tomb Raider film? And to give you a clue, it's Ben's future wife.
Alicia Vikander.
Yes.
I hope it is.
That's your prize this week. You win Alicia.
I'd have to go and murder her actual husband, Michael Fassbender.
And I like him, so let's not get in a fight with him. And the winner is Phoebe Matthews on Facebook. Peter Rabbit has just come out in the cinema, and thanks to Sony, Penguin Books, Puffin, Rainbow Designs, Fidel and Jumbo Games, we had a keyring, we had a tote bag, we had a shaker set, we had a headband, we had a floor puzzle, a puzzle box set, a talking rabbit, a sticker book, and a drawing kit. And it was really, really, really simple. Who voiced the character of Peter Rabbit? And to give you a clue, he's an idiot. His name is...
James Corden.
It is. And Vicky Wilson on Twitter will be getting that sent to you. And I want to see pictures because there's absolutely loads. So make sure you're in because that parcel is going to be absolutely massive. To tie in with our masturbate over Russell Crowe, we had Last Exit to Nowhere t-shirts. Give us a LA Confidential t-shirt. And all we said was, do you want one? That was all it was. Really, really simple. So we had quite a few people say they wanted one. But Andy Griffiths, which is at Darth Dork, will be getting that in the post. And I want to see a picture of that because it's a fucking great t-shirt. And again, we tied it in nicely with our top three twists. So we had an Unbreakable t-shirt because let's be honest about it, Shyamalan is the king of twists. Oh man, have you seen this Unbreakable t-shirt?
Yes.
It is stunning.
That's the limited edition, isn't
it? Yep,
it's
and Ben beautiful. Made it really simple. Do you want one? And someone called at Scofie27 said, yes, I want one.
Good.
We do make it too easy, I think, at times. Do you want one? Our good friends at Funko came along and they had a complete set of the Emperor's New Groove set. And all you had to do was leave us a 5-star iTunes rating. Well, actually an iTunes rating, but you're never going to win unless you give us a 5-star, let's
true,
be honest.
True.
And Kaleto 5-star, simply put, the greatest podcast I've ever heard and I've stopped listening to Empire because you're that good. We don't say, you know, it's up to you if you stop listening to other podcasts.
It's a free country, but yeah, good decision.
It was good. And also, we were going to give a set to someone that gave us a screenshot of them listening to the Skip to the End podcast.
Yeah.
And Andrew Lewis did one, and his screenshot is him in the gym. You probably saw it in an exercise.
I did.
Yes. Listening to us. I probably know him. I'm always at the gym myself.
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
Always pumping iron. Yeah.
Sorry about being late today, guys. It was just a full session. You know, I really want to feel the burn.
Leg day today, wasn't it? Leg day.
Massive, always.
We don't call you Mark. We call you Jim now, don't we?
And finally, our good friends at Richer Sounds gave us a JBL speaker, which is a Bluetooth one. And we said, what would be the first thing that you ever listen to on the speaker when it arrives?
And there can only be one answer, surely.
I had to pick it.
Yeah.
So Louise Helmsworth put, of course, the Skip to the End podcast.
Good answer.
Some people were putting good bands that we like. It works, but let's be honest about it. You're never going to win unless you say Skip to the End.
Yeah.
But like I said, I think I bigged it up a bit too much on the last episode, so let's see if I actually deliver the goods. I said it's our biggest ever competition for stuff like Ready Player One. We'll kick things off with Universal. So they've come up with a Blockers bundle, so I'm quite looking forward to this film.
Pooch has seen it.
I have. It's fantastic. And John Cena's the man, and you can actually see him.
Wow.
For once.
I've heard such good things, and I trust you anyway, but it's nice to see that other people agree. We've got a phone case, some shot glasses, and a t-shirt. So let's say, which WWE wrestler stars in Blockers?
Oh, might have just spoiled that one.
There we go. Really simple. They've also got a new film out called Truth or Dare, which looks like a great horror. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. We've got a hoodie, a t-shirt, a notebook, and a phone case. And we would say, who would you like to play Truth or Dare with? That's a good one. Keep it clean. Our good friends at Warner Brothers. Now, I've asked them to come up with something good for Ready Player One. So they've given us a set of badges that you can only win.
Badges? We don't need no stinking badges.
Some LED glasses, which are really, really cool. A light-up USB hub. We've also got a Bluetooth speaker and amplifier. We've got a backpack. We've got a mini arcades machine with 300 games installed on it. So it's like these mini arcades, which are all the old games.
Cool.
One of those. A baseball t-shirt, a sweatshirt, a tote bag, a Rubik's Cube set of four pint glasses, a varsity-style hoodie, and a ringer tee. Do you know what I mean?
Pretty good.
The ringer-style t-shirt.
Oh, I thought you said like a mug of coffee. Like,
no. Stop talking rubbish.
A ring of tea.
Oh, yeah. I would have been well up for that.
Tetley's. But yes, who directed Ready Player One? Should we make it that simple?
Yeah.
Our good friends Funko have come along and given us a full set of the 8 pops for the series, which is incredible. So the Ready Player One pops.
Amazing.
Have you seen them? They look incredible. Check them out. Let's say, for the 8 pops, they're also going to chuck in a set of the figures and the key set, which is exclusive to Funko. What score did we just give Ready Player One? And you know what? Because they're so generous, they've also given us a second set for someone that leaves us an iTunes rating.
Excellent.
But nice. Funko have got a present for Ben this week.
Aww.
What?
Not you, Gemma, but you had the shiny ones recently, so this is Ben's turn. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready. Are you?
Yeah.
He sent me and you a pop because some wrestler popped into the Funko studios last week.
Oh, Christ.
And he got us both a signed Braun Strowman Funko.
Oh, you're shitting me! That is unreal. Get these hands! Signed Braun Strowman.
Yes, he got me a new one.
That's fucking wild.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Sully. That is kick-ass.
Oh my God, your little face!
We love him. He's probably the best wrestler right now.
He's so over. Yeah. He's so popular right now.
Is he a good one then?
He's amazing.
He's amazing. He's a badass.
So, I don't know where we
You're
go from
so
there.
Happy!
Yes. But, you know, look at that. We're not giving that away.
Hell no.
Get your own.
Oh, just look at that.
That's going in my will. Bequeath that to someone on my death.
It's so good, isn't it? The fact he signed it as well. He said he was a really cool guy as well, like hanging out all day with all the fans. Mm. Just a really cool guy. So he did well. So thanks very much for that. To tie him nicely with our topic of the top spoofs, good old Last Exit to Nowhere have come up with a Trans America t-shirt for Airplane, which is perfect.
Cool.
So let's say who directed Airplane. Really, really simple. And as it's a big Spielberg episode with Ready Player One, they've come up with an Amity Island Jaws t-shirt. What year was Jaws released? How's that?
Fair. Yeah.
They've got a Temple of Doom t-shirt, which is the Club Obi-Wan t-shirt, which is great. So let's say, Obi-Wan, let me think. What franchise is Obi-Wan part of?
I wonder.
Yeah. And finally, they've given us a Mayflower t-shirt from Close Encounters. So we've kind of covered all of Spielberg's classics.
Pretty much.
Which actor stars in Close Encounters and Jaws? That's quite simple.
Nice.
Yeah.
And finally, Dark Bunny Tees, our good friends, have come up with a brand new Aliens tee. So let's say, who plays Ripley in Alien? That's really bloody simple. And they've just released a brand new Steve Rogers beard oil t-shirt to go in line with the new release of Infinity War. Let's just say, tweet us your favourite Avenger. How's that?
Yeah.
Really nice.
Yeah, I guess.
Is that all good?
Yeah. Bloody hell, we're giving away a lot.
You're looking a little bit sad, so we've also got you a Han Solo Funko.
Oh.
There you go. Is that all right?
That don't get cocky, kid.
So what we'll do, we'll announce all the winners in 2 weeks' time.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a name out of the pot and we talk about our favourite performance from said actor or actress. So it's not about the film, it's our performance preference. So on the last episode, we picked out Tilda Swinton. I was a little bit excited about this because I think she is God and therefore all arguments are null and void. But that's just my opinion. I want to hear about yours two's opinion. So I'm going to throw this over to Ben first. Ben, what's your favourite T-Swizzle one?
T-Swizzle. There can be only one. It's Minister Mason in Snowpiercer.
Same nice. Here. Mine too.
So if you haven't seen Snowpiercer, get your life right.
So true.
You need to see this film. It's Bong Joon-ho's astounding dystopian sci-fi about a gigantic train that circumnavigates the frozen earth because there was like a new ice age and the battle between the haves and the have-nots who live on this train. And Swinton plays Mason, who is this despotic official who's responsible for maintaining order on the train. And before we get into the performance, the first thing you notice about her is the look. She's got this bad wig and these granny glasses and these goofy teeth, and it makes her instantly hilarious. She's like a weird northern Margaret Thatcher crossed with a League of Gentlemen character.
Yes, she is.
Royston Basie living.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, Tilda Swinton, as a human, outside of her film roles, she's entirely unique and instantly recognisable. You wouldn't confuse her for anyone else. But in her films, she's so able to disappear. She has this chameleonic ability to just entirely disappear to the point where we're going to come to the social media in a bit, but no end of people on social media when naming their favourite roles said, didn't realise it was her at first, didn't realise till the end it was her, because she just disappears. And that's true of this role. She's almost unrecognisable. And in terms of the performance, even when she's trying to be engaging, she's trying to speak to these people on the train, especially the lower class people, but she always has this sinister undercurrent, no matter how nice she's being, especially with that sinister, forced smile that she has on her face. It's absolutely amazing. And my favourite part about the performance, and Gemma, you might echo me on this, is the speech she gives about knowing your place in society.
Yes.
And it's when she uses the analogy of someone wearing a shoe on their head. The whole if you've not seen the film, at least go to YouTube and search for Tilda Swinton, Snowpiercer, shoe, and just watch that monologue from her.
I am a hat, you are a shoe.
Yeah.
Hat, shoe.
It's so good.
Yeah. I'm amazed when actors have the ability to become a chameleon and transform into something that you would never recognise them in. And this is possibly only one of the best examples, if not the best example of Tilda Swinton's career. There's a million others. And yeah, like Ben said, we're going to hear about them in a minute. My favourite bit, and it's a fleeting moment of a scene. So there's members of the tail section. They're about to clash with the henchmen of the upper class. And they're about to go through a tunnel. And so Minister Mason brings out these sort of X-ray night vision goggles to her eyes. And she has this maniacal, gleeful smile on her face. And it reminds me of the villains that you see in like a manga cartoon or a Japanese anime that is just so hell-bent on seeing this destruction that's about to play ahead of her. And she's going to love every single second of it. And you're right, that it goes to show about the undercurrent of uneasiness about Minister Mason. She's a terrifying and formidable character, but of course you see her, you can't help but think, she looks like Deirdre Barlow.
She does.
That's a great example,
But simply put, she is Minister Mason.
Yeah, she's absolutely amazing. And an interesting little fact is that when Bong Joon-ho was writing this film, he actually wrote that part with John C. Reilly in mind.
Nice.
And then, you know, he didn't really change it that much, apparently, when he cast Tilda Swinton.
Oh, she's perfect. She's tailor-made for the role.
I'm going to say it now. We will have that as a future rewatch.
Yep.
Thank
because
you.
Not enough people know about this film.
Yeah.
And I think it's not actually available on DVD in the UK. I think it's one of those films that's
crazy.
It's been on Netflix. That's where I saw it.
Yeah, me too.
But
yeah.
A lot of people said that, like, I think it's only available on, like, French import or German. Because I know people have bought the Steelbook to see it. I don't know why. Sometimes they just don't get released.
It's worth getting, though. It's worth investing in because whatever year it came out, was it 2013?
2013.
It was my film of the year, that particular year. I think it's just a phenomenal piece of work.
It's also worth noting you've got Chris Evans, you've got Jamie Bell, you've got an amazing little cameo by Alison Pill as the school teacher. Everything.
Ed Harris.
John Hurt.
Ed Harris.
Just go and watch it. If you can get the chance, watch it, please.
Yeah, just import it off whatever site you need to.
Yeah.
It's on Amazon.French or whatever it is.
Amazon.French.
That's it. I kind of wish I was on the same page, but I'm not on this occasion. So I've gone with We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Great choice.
Oh, amazing.
Eva as the mother, who basically shows what it's like not to love your child and have any kind of skin-on-skin interaction. She's an uninterested mother. She doesn't really have any bond with this child. And it kind of shows the power that this child can have over any adult given the opportunity. It's a harrowing film to watch. Mm-hmm. She has no idea what she's doing as a mother. She just doesn't really care for this son of hers, and these years of neglect take its toll completely on Kevin, so much so that when she tries to build a relationship, he's just like kind of like so dismissive and like, fuck off. They go out for dinner and he's not interested, he's just sitting there playing with his food.
He's a sociopath.
She walks in on him masturbating and he doesn't stop and get embarrassed. He carries on, gets more and more horny, wanks harder and stares at her in the face his own mother. It's a very hard watch. Her facial expressions, her body language says it all throughout the film. She is an absolute legend of an actress, isn't she?
Yes. She is.
Unbelievable. And watching all the social media responses reminded me of just how diverse she can be as an actress.
Yes, it's diverse. Great choice of
unbelievable. It's a riveting film. It's so sad because she's such a desperate mother, but she can't do it. If you're not born with that love, and even when you first see your child, it's supposed to be the most happy, best blissful feeling in the world. Yeah. She doesn't have it. From the moment she gives birth, she doesn't want it. This results in Kevin turning into the worst, scummiest kid ever. He's killing his sister's little gerbil or guinea pig or pet. But that's not it. The end of this film is all about basically killing everyone in his class at school. They're in a gym class and he has a bow and arrow and uses these D-locks from bikes to lock them all in this one room. And the facial expression, you don't actually see these kids being killed. You just see the of these arrows hitting these people, and he's getting off on it. It's like the biggest, most satisfying feeling watching all of his friends and people that he's grown up with dying. And when he walks out, that he knows he's done it, his mum is there, and the face is a little bit like American History X of proud, you know, I've just murdered someone in cold blood, but he's killed a whole entire school. Shocking. It's a big spoiler there, sorry, but go and watch this film because it's absolutely heart-wrenching, but it's fucking amazing. One of the most powerful films I've ever seen, and it's solely down to Tilda and Kevin himself. And John C. Reilly.
I was about to say, John C. Reilly plays the husband.
And
Synergy.
He's actually quite serious in this film. He's not the over-the-top, like, so many activities. Yeah. That would be weird, but brilliant. Have you seen, you've both seen
it? I have,
it?
Yeah. The kid that plays Kevin is Ezra Miller.
That's the guy.
From the Justice League.
And the director is Lynn Ramsey, who directed You Were Never Really Here, which was my recommendation from last episode.
It's like we all just planned this.
Yeah, the book's excellent that it's based on
I've heard a lot of things about the book.
Such a heavy view. I do warn you now, it's not an easy watch. It's not a beer and pizza film with your missus on a Saturday night.
But
it's a film that will stay with you, and I absolutely adore it.
Yeah. It's a gin and sadness film.
Crying to that gin. Honestly, hardcore viewing. Let's hear what the good old beautiful people on our social media have come up with this time.
Edward V on Twitter, at EdwardVal29, agrees with you, Mark. He said we need to talk about Kevin. How she didn't get an Oscar nomination at the very least was crazy. Mm-hmm. I agree with you, Edward. Darren Burgoyne on Facebook has said she's excellent as the embodiment of exploitative capitalism in Okja. Now, I still haven't seen Okja on Netflix. I know you have, Mark.
I loved it.
It's a great film.
It's a good Gemma.
Yes.
I need to catch up with that then.
Very, very powerful film. Yeah. And you will want to be a vegetarian for 5 minutes after seeing it.
Definitely.
5 minutes. And then you'll have a bacon sandwich.
But she also plays two characters.
Yeah.
Two twins.
So
and
I've
they're
heard.
Both as different as each other.
Interesting. I'll check that one out. Again on Twitter, Denny Different, at Denny Different 2, said she was brilliant in Michael Clayton with George Clooney. Highly underrated movie and definitely one of Swinton's best.
She got nominated for an Oscar for that one, and it's a great film.
It is an excellent film. Mm. Yeah, really good. On Instagram, Jessica Louise 89 has said, I love her in Snowpiercer, an underrated movie all round in my eyes, and she was bloody brilliant in it as Minister Mason.
Agreed.
Which obviously we all agree with. Back on Twitter, Marcus at the Marco Guy has said, my favourite is probably Gabriel from Constantine. Such an odd and entertaining role.
A lot of people came with that answer.
One of the most popular.
It was probably the most popular one. Yeah, I mean, and I would tend to agree. That's a fun film. I like Constantine. It pisses all over the work of Alan Moore and Garth Ennis. People have worked on the Constantine character in the DC comics. But it is a fun film in and of itself, and she is arguably the best bit in it. So it's a fair choice. Mm-hmm. Joanne Scarlett on Facebook has said Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, she's so recognisable
good.
In that.
With the old age makeup. Yeah, that one's fantastic. Sambly Moron on Twitter, at Sambly Moron, said loved her in Trainwreck and I didn't even recognise her. As I've mentioned, a lot of people are saying this. And I agree, I didn't recognise her at first. I thought it was Kathy Beale from EastEnders. Honestly, she just looks like one of those, doesn't she? You know. But yeah, she's good in that. I didn't like that film, but she is good in it. Adam Coffey on Facebook has said, burn after reading. It was the first thing I remember her from. She had a presence like she didn't belong in the movie, but was really wonderful.
I completely forgot she's in that.
I forgot she was in that.
I forget that film, basically, because it's shit.
Yeah, Coen Brothers is kind of Norbit. It is, isn't it? It's fair. It's shite.
Christian Dabner on Twitter, at Dabner Fish, has said, I am love, debate over. Now, I've not seen I Am Love.
I've heard about it. I've heard it's a very critically acclaimed film, but I've not seen it either.
Me neither.
It was directed by Luca Guadagnino, who did Call Me By Your Name.
Ooh. Yeah. I'll check that out.
Check that one out. And then finally on Facebook, Colette Wheeler has said, only lovers left alive. She is both completely otherworldly, but human all at once, and brings depth to the idea of a vampire story, especially at a time when vampires are so taboo, thanks to the likes of Twilight.
That's a pretty good film. The relationship between her and Tom Hiddleston's quite electric. But yeah, she is ethereal. She's ethereal.
I saw someone on social media say she should be cast as the leading role in a film all about David Bowie.
You know what?
Yeah.
And it's so true.
Androgyny, that's right. Yeah, now, both of them.
She has done a very androgynous role in a film called Orlando, which was directed by Sally Potter in 1992. Mm. And halfway through the film, she plays this gentleman called Orlando that's been born into royalty. And halfway through the film, she's the same person, but her gender switches, so she becomes a woman, but still with the name Orlando, the personality traits and everything. And that is a great underrated film. It was knocking on a door to be my favourite Tilda Swinton performance.
And we did have a few people say that on social media. Yes, so it is a popular
one. Superb film.
Whose turn is it to pick out of the
posh?
It's mine.
Oh, here we go.
Lucky boy.
On a drum roll, Mark.
Always. That was a long drum roll, sorry. On the next episode, we'll be masturbating over Robert Downey Jr.
It's only the bloody rewatch time.
Bloody hell.
I know, we're up to that stage of the episode. And on the last episode, it was my choice, and I chose Ben Wheatley's Sightseers, a film starring and written by Alice Lowe and Steve Oram. The synopsis is as follows. Tina leads somewhat of a sheltered life living with her elderly mother in Birmingham. This all changes when she's taken on holiday across England with her boyfriend Chris. He feels it's the perfect time in their relationship to invite her into his world. And he's not just a bearded, soft-spoken caravan enthusiast. Oh, no. He could also be a murderer.
Ooh.
How will Tina react? Will their relationship survive? And will Tina emerge from her life of oppression and grow into someone just like Chris? It's a very interesting one. It's a film I've seen that I enjoyed the first time, but I haven't seen it for a good long while. So, Mark, I want to throw this to you because this is your first watch of the film. Sightseers, a sight for sore eyes or not worth seeing?
Before you answer, let's give that some credit because that was pretty good. I like that,
Jeb. Thank you.
Sightseers, shite-seers. No, it's not.
But I just wanted an excuse
Bless
to use that.
You.
Bloody hell, that film's dark.
What the hell did I watch?
It was fucking weird, mental. And just as I'm watching, I'm thinking I'm grasping what's going on. Something just completely goes crazy. I can't look at a dog, a knitting needle, or a caravan in the same way anymore. I think every girl that I've ever met that I've had sexual stuff with is never on the level of this girl that's on this film.
Sexual stuff?
Yeah. Otherwise known as sex.
Hanky panky.
Knocking boots?
It's fucking weird film, and I loved it. It's very, very dark. I'm talking so dark. I mean, I liked Kill List, and I thought that was quite messed up.
That's
kind of like, hold my beer, give me a couple of years, I'm going to top it.
Yeah.
One of the best British filmmakers of our generation,
absolutely.
Let's be honest about it. We absolutely loved Free Fire. I love everything. There's not enough. I want to kind of go, well, I'm going to watch everything. I have. Yeah. Now I've ticked them all off. Thank you, Gemma. I absolutely loved it. Very, very messed up.
Yeah.
I didn't sleep very well last night.
I don't blame
you. I just kept thinking of being woken up with a guy filming me from behind.
I dream of waking up and all I'm going to hear is, buddy!
Nice. But I loved it.
That's great news. Ben, what do you think?
He's not a person, Tina. He's a Daily Mail reader. It's a deliciously dark comedy with some gruesome visuals. Really, really nasty stuff, yeah. But hilariously quotable lines. It's such a great film with two of the best, most understated performances you'll ever see from Oren and Lowe. I love this film so, so much.
This is my favourite Ben Wheatley film. I've mentioned this. Yeah, it really is. And it says a lot because when you compare films such as High Rise, Kill List, A Field in England, I get very underrated too. Not a lot of people have heard about it. He is working on a new film with the working title of Colin Uranus.
Yes.
I'm sure it will amount to something eventually. But at the moment, this is my favourite Ben Wheatley film. It's deliciously dark. It is hilariously funny. It shouldn't be funny, but you can't help but snicker to yourself whenever you hear those lines. The whole thing with Poppy / Banjo is just really weird. The deaths too. One of the most realistic deaths I think I've seen in film. This isn't just a, you know, shot in the heart and you're to blame, you give love a bad name. But this is when their heads knock against stone, they cave in.
Yeah. Yeah.
This ain't your mama's film. No. This is hardcore. And it's everything works about this film. And I'm so excited that you guys love it. I'm really happy.
I wouldn't ever dampen you on this one. It's, I know how much he means to you. And I would hate to sit here now and go, oh, I didn't get it.
Yeah.
You know me well enough by now.
Yeah.
Dark, gore, slight horror elements of those deaths.
Yeah.
Especially when the caravan goes over that person and you see it go over twice. That's how a body would react. I hate it when you see films and they explode over the top gore. If a caravan ran over you and your legs and your spine, you would just still be okay, but crush to shit.
Yeah.
That's how it's done. If a brick hits you in the head, like you said, it's going to cave in.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like Peter Jackson's over the top horror. This is hardcore. It's probably too real that it's actually quite disturbing. I find it harder to watch too real.
Yes.
I'd rather be the kind of Tarantino spray and blood. It's easier to kind of just switch off then.
Yeah,
it is. You're absolutely right. If it seems comical over the top, your mind can kind of discount it. That's too crazy to believe.
Yeah.
But when you see someone's head bounce off a rock and cave in, you're like, fuck me, too real.
Yeah.
Too real.
Yeah. So I want to go back to Alice Lowe and Steve Oram.
Mm.
Now, the relationship between these two is off the records. They work so perfectly in unison together. The fact they even wrote this film is a testament to how much they cared about the project. But Alice Lowe, I've spoken to her before about being a very underrated actress.
Yeah.
My God, she needs to be on everybody's lips. I know, I think earlier on in the week, she won an award at a film awards, which is great for another film she did called Revenge.
Okay.
She's also very good.
Yeah.
But these two chemistry, you're talking about our next episode's top three. I have a feeling I might be talking about these two again.
Spoiler.
But they are not relationship goals. We
no,
mentioned about Fargo
so
a few episodes ago. Yeah. That is love personified.
Yeah.
This is such a messed up love where they almost goad each other on to commit these weird and awful acts of violence just to validate it for each other. But what do you think? I mean, how did you interpret their relationship?
Messed up. Definitely not something I want in my life.
Well.
But you kind of, you see that they're still together. They go through a lot and they stay together. And that's quite nice to see on a screen. If you can go through each other murdering people and kind of have each other's back.
Yeah.
And then do dirty sexual things.
Which we'll come to.
They've got a big bond.
Oh,
and I don't know, it's very odd. It's a relationship that only they will really appreciate from being in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Fair play. They're still together. I'm happy for them.
The thing I love about Tina is that she's so kind of simple-minded and sweet-natured, which is what makes it all the more shocking when she's so accepting of Chris's homicidal tendencies. And then when she starts leaning into her own homicidal tendencies, it's just this complete shift that you don't see coming. She's so kind of placid and docile. And then she's just a stone-cold motherfucker. And the interesting thing is, Chris has his own viewpoint on it. He's kind of like Dexter. You know the show Dexter?
Yes.
When Chris starts killing people, he kind of believes he has a code. He only kills people that he thinks deserves it. So either they've offended him in some way or he's jealous of them. His code is bullshit, clearly.
Yeah.
But he can kind of justify it to himself. Whereas she is just indiscriminately killing people, like the jogger that she just plows the car into. And so he hates her. He thinks that she's just a murderer, whereas he justifies his own killings. It's so such an odd relationship between the two of them.
I absolutely love that you said Dexter. So my notes here I've put, when I was watching this, the first thing I thought of was Dexter meets League of Gentlemen meets In Bruges.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
stick those three together and that's what you get. Dexter seems quite tame to watch when you're now watching this. I thought it was quite bad in watching it on TV, but no, this isn't. Dexter doesn't get even close on this dark level of death.
I really appreciate Wheatley's style of directing throughout the whole film. Yeah. So it's not just a straightforward shot film that we see every day in the cinema. The use of slow motion, the use of music. One of my favourite scenes is when they're confronted by the National Trust guy, who tells Tina to pick Poppy's shit up from the floor because it's ruining nature.
Yeah.
Chris starts stalking him with a great big stick and he strikes him on the back of the head. Then the film kind of goes into slow motion and we have a voiceover of a poem of Jerusalem, I believe it is. I think so, you know, in those feet of ancient times, that kind. But it's just so, it's almost like the pride of England meets this horrific, violent act of murder melded into one, and we see Tina drop to her knees, seeing the whole thing ravel in front of her because she's never seen Chris kill in front of her. And then it's just ended with that crunch of the skull. The poem stops, the music stops, and we're back into the reality of what's just happened.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not Spielberg. This is not anybody's mind but Ben Wheatley's. And I appreciate
it. I want to meet him. Me too.
Yeah. So cool.
The direction in this is so great. I love that he uses a lot of handheld close-up photography. It's like a documentary style. And it really puts you in the mind of these people, in the viewpoint of these people. There's one particular scene that I think is a bravura piece of filmmaking. It's when he cross-cuts Chris caving that guy's head in. So you see him smacking the rock into that guy's head, and then it cuts to the guy's wife cracking an egg on the frying pan. And then it cuts to the shaman ripping the head off a chicken, and it's just cross-cutting between these three things. It's so brilliantly done.
And you see her stub her foot with a shard of ceramic mug, and the blood starts shooting out of her foot, and we see the blood pouring out of this guy's head. That, it's magnificent. The fragmentation kind of comes in all together.
I always think what it'd be like to be on set, because you know, with like the kind of the special effects team, they must be his best mates. He's growing up with it. You know, he's done loads of sort of parody stuff growing up on probably like a Super 8 camera. He's gone, come on, lads, I've got some budget now. Let's just go for it.
Because
they all look very good. Even in Kill List, everything was done in that kind of texture. Even in the deaths we saw in Free Fire, they were so over the top. The same amount of gore, but not in a unrealistic way, in a human way. And I think, I just want to see more. I'm so annoyed that he's only young, isn't he? We've got years and years ahead of him. But what was the reception like when it came out? Because I don't know. I've been late to the game.
Massively, overwhelmingly positive.
Good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it debuted at one of the festivals. It might have been Toronto or something like that in the US. Did well there, did well over here. It was never going to be a big blockbuster at the cinemas, but the critics thoroughly loved it, as well they should, because it's amazing. Yeah. Just going off on a tangent slightly. Because these characters are from Birmingham, there's just an... I want to apologise to our good friend Benny, who's from the West Midlands, and my family are all from Wolverhampton. So anyone from the West Midlands, I mean nothing bad by this, but the West Midlands accent is innately funny. Anything said in a West Midlands accent is funnier than if it's in any other accent, because it's non-threatening. They never seem like violent. Like, if you hear people who are Cockneys, you always think they're going to stab you.
Yeah.
Whereas people with West Midlands accents could say the exact same thing as the Cockney, but you think they're going to make you a cup of tea instead.
Like Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, exactly. So hearing that kind of threatening shit, or just weird out there shit coming from a West Midlands accent, is always funnier. So one of the lines that just absolutely slayed me is when Tina says, "He says he wants to shit in my hand and make me use it as a brown lipstick."
It's amazing. And what I love about it is his stone face while it's all being said, all this sort of sexual kinky stuff. He's like, as if to say, yeah, I am. I have said this, but I don't want to admit it. His mate's just like, oh, brilliant.
Or after he kills the first guy at the tram museum, and instead of looking inwards about how he's murdered some guy, he actually says, "It's ruined the tram museum for me now."
Well, that's when they're at the police station. Yeah. I'm so upset.
Benny, don't be offended by this. I know you're sitting there listening to Travis right now, but please don't be offended by Ben's
Or cast, probably.
Yeah, or Embrace.
Didn't you say Franz Ferdinand?
All them.
Okay. All of them.
Bloody loves it.
Lovely. I kind of want to touch upon the minimalist score that haunts the film throughout. So it's by a guy called Jim Williams, and he did the score for Kill List and Raw, which was one of the big hitters of the horror genre.
I've not seen that.
It's on Netflix at the moment, I believe, so it
might... People said it's amazing.
I know, people have said it's been pretty damn good, but I really want to watch it. But it's so... what's the best way to describe it? It's almost like this sort of friendly kind of lilting tones, but at the same time, you know something's off about it.
Yeah.
And it's really, really creepy the way how it's used. It's only just sort of like little plinky plonky bits of notes here and there. But the way how it's used throughout the whole film suggests that this is not a normal relationship. This is not a normal situation. And it also harkens to the film opens with Tainted Love by Soft Cell, which
June.
this their relationship is. It's a tainted love. I mean, murder is never acceptable in any situation.
Depends the conditions. Things aren't going right.
I'll reword that.
Yeah.
Murder can sometimes be acceptable, but, I mean, it is... Yeah. It is viewed as a pretty bad thing.
If someone litters at a tram museum, they deserve to die.
Yeah, you can roll over those motherfuckers. And the crescendo of the whole film, which I think we should talk about, because when I first saw this film, it shocked me to my utter core, and then kicking into the original Tainted Love version. The film, we see what happens, and they decide they don't want to go back to their lives. They want to end on this romantic note, so they're going to go to the viaduct, and they're going to throw themselves off this bridge. So they set the caravan alight. You know, The Power of Love by Frankie Goes to Hollywood is crescending to this almighty part. And they go up to the viaduct, they stand on the ledge, and Chris turns to the teens like, "Have you had a good holiday?" She's like, "I've had the best time."
Ben's got the better impression. Yeah.
Hey, give me props for trying. So they both hold hands and they go, "Right, ready? 3, 2, 1, go." Chris goes and Tina draws her hand back. Tina doesn't fucking jump.
Yeah.
She is the ultimate badass. Yep. She's worse than Chris. And the film ends.
You just see her looking at her hand.
Yeah.
Ends. Yeah. Credits roll.
Dun, 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 dun,
also,
dun,
how
dun,
realistic dun, dun. Does it look when he hits the floor?
Yeah. Oh,
the crunch. The slump of the body.
It's horrible.
Again, every death in the film is like that.
Yeah. Yep. I don't... What are you going to say?
Well, I want to talk about the sexy sex. It's not hardcore super sex. There's a sex scene where Tina and Chris are at it in the caravan, and he's doing it from behind, and her face is in a pot of potpourri.
I can't live without potpourri.
And then the little dog starts nibbling at his ass.
Banjo.
How many takes was that, do you reckon?
Oh, it's so good.
The sex stuff is pretty hardcore, isn't it? It's like watching a dodgy porno.
It is. And I love it when he says to that, his mate says, "She doesn't like me doing up the bumhole."
It's the accent, though. Don't be offended. It's fine. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, it has been, hasn't it?
Before we wrap this up, I just want to mention my favourite visual in the entire film.
Please do.
It's when Tina is writing what we assume to be a goodbye note to Chris using that giant pencil, that novelty pencil she's bought, that's like over her shoulder like Jesus' cross.
25 quid that was.
Best money spent.
Fuck it out. So good.
So if you haven't watched this film, why, first and foremost? But as you can tell, we've had a pretty good time talking about it. So I think we should score it. So Ben, give your best score.
Holy moly. It's bleak as fuck, but so, so funny and has such repeat value. You just want to watch it all the time. It's 9 out of 10 for me.
Super duper. Mark?
I've only watched it once, but as an impact, it made me smile. It made me not sleep very well and have images I can't get out of my head just yet. So it's a very high 8, which I think is good for a first time rewatch.
Fantastic. I'm with Ben. It's a 9 out of 10 for me. I'm so excited about watching it again. I'm so excited about spreading the word about this great film, and I'm so excited to see what Whitley's got up his sleeve on the next time. So Sightseers gets a wonderful skip to the end 9 out of 10. That was fun.
Tremendous.
I enjoyed that. So who's going next?
Oh, that'd be me.
Oh, yay!
So my next rewatch, it's a film that we have mentioned no end of times on this podcast.
Jaws!
Yes! His little face!
Yes!
Over the last 3.5 years, it's come up a lot, but we've never actually properly talked about it. It's never even come up in a topic.
Oh.
So the film that we're going to be rewatching next time round is Danny Boyle's sci-fi thriller, Sunshine.
Yes!
It's time for our brand new quiz, which is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mastermind.
Yay!
Which is a blatant rip-off of the UK game show.
Homage.
Mastermind. But we're jettisoning the bits of the show we don't like, and we're just doing it in our own way. So effectively, what it's going to be is, Mark and Gemma are our contestants today, and each of them have a specialist subject, i.e. a film that they apparently know a hell of a lot about. I'm going to ask each one of them 10 questions on that film. And there won't be a winner today. It's going to be cumulative over the course of 3 episodes, which means we'll all get to do 2 specialist films. And at the end of the three, whoever has the most points is the Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mastermind Grand Champion.
No pressure.
No pressure.
Oh, I'm feeling it already.
So, Pooch, I'm throwing it over to you first.
Hello.
Gemma.
Yes.
What is your specialist subject?
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
So your 10 questions on Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory begin now. Number one, on whose book was the film based?
Roald Dahl.
Correct. Number two, what year was the film released?
1978.
Incorrect. 1971.
Oh, shit, really?
Way off. Bollocks. Number three, who played protagonist Charlie Bucket?
Peter Ullstrom.
Correct. Number four, what fate befalls Veruca Salt in the factory?
She falls through a set of scales where the goose eggs are being measured. So she falls down a chute.
She falls down a garbage chute. I'll give you that. Yeah, well done. Number five, who performed extensive rewrites on Roald Dahl's script, leading Dahl to disown the film?
Oh, pure guess. Mel Stewart?
Incorrect. It's David Seltzer.
Damn it.
Supposed to be an expert. Clearly not. Number six, which US breakfast cereal company financed the creation of the movie?
Kellogg's.
Incorrect. It's Quaker Oats.
Oh, we'll have to go to their factory one day.
Yeah, might bloody have to now.
It's not as good as the Weetabix factory.
What is?
Exactly.
Number seven, who was Roald Dahl's first choice to play Willy Wonka?
Oh my goodness me. Oh, bollocks, I know this.
Say it then.
What if it came out of my brain?
I'm being nice because I know what the pressure's like. I'm not going to give you any hard times right now.
Mark, it's terrifying.
I know.
Bollocks. Gene.
Billie Jean.
Gene.
The answer was Spike Milligan.
Nothing like the what I thought.
Number eight. The Chocolate Factory was in reality a gasworks in which European city?
Munich.
Correct.
Nice.
Number nine, in what category did the film receive its only Oscar nomination?
Original music or original score.
Correct.
Yes.
And finally, question 10. What happened to the man who suddenly got everything he always wanted?
He lived happily ever after.
Well done, Pooch.
Amazing.
I thought that was a little curveball. I didn't know she'd get that one, but that's right. That's the last bit of dialogue in the film. Well done, Gemma.
Wow, that was... Ooh.
I don't like it because I know this is to come from me in a minute.
I'm rooting for you, buddy. No, you can don't. Do this. Come on.
Gemma, you've got a very solid 6 out of 10 there.
Okay, I'm
going
work.
Home.
That's good work. Mark, mate, come on.
You can do this.
Don't be defeatist. Are you ready for yours?
It doesn't look ready. You can do this.
I'm nervous.
Come on.
Mark, what is your specialist subject?
It is the film Big.
10 questions on Big, beginning now. Number one, who directed Big?
Penny Marshall.
Correct. In what year was the film released?
1988.
Correct.
Wow.
What character does Tom Hanks play?
Joshua Baskin.
Correct. You even gave him his full Sunday name, Joshua. Most people say Josh.
His mum calls him Joshua, but his friend calls him Josh.
Such a nerd.
Number four. What was the name of the fortune teller machine that grants Josh's wish to be big? Come on, dude.
No. It's, give me a sec. Zoltar Speaks.
I would have accepted Zoltar, but that's fine. Yeah. Okay. Number five. Who plays the owner of the toy store where Josh works?
I can't remember. It's an old guy and he's classic. Oh, he's such a good actor.
Gemma knows it, but you don't get a point, Gemma. No. Go on, you can tell him anyway.
Is it Robert Loggia?
It is Robert Loggia. You don't get anything for that, but you're right. Mark, if you get this one wrong, there's something wrong with you. In which real-life store was the famous walking piano seen in the film?
FAO Schwartz.
Correct.
And we've been there.
This is the point.
Yeah.
We've actually been there.
Oh.
Mark elbowed a child out of the way.
Is this true?
When we went there, there was kind of like a velvet rope around it where you had to queue to get onto this piano. Mark just decided to jump over the rope, push a kid out of the way just so we could take a photo of him on it.
In excuse for myself, we did have a plane to catch in about 2 hours and I was never going to go to New York and not get a photo on that famous piano.
Which is no longer there.
Yeah.
Really?
Because FAO Schwartz closed a couple of years after
we went there. Getting an elbow to the head is all worth it.
Justified.
Was he a bit of a prick?
It was a little girl.
Oh my god!
She was about three.
You're going to hell.
Worth it. You ready for the next one?
I'm sweating.
Come on.
You're doing really well here, dude. You've only got one wrong so far.
Don't.
Question seven. It's getting tougher now, though. Which Oscar-winning actor lost out on the part of Josh due to his high salary demands?
Robert De Niro.
Fucking hell, he's right.
He was the first actor to want something like $6 million, and it was too much for the budget.
Holy hell.
Oh my God, all right, Mr. Big. Jeez. I know.
Bugger me. Number 8. Which future blockbuster director was the cinematographer on this film?
I don't know. I'm not even going to guess.
It's the director of Men in Black, Barry Sonnenfeld.
I'll never get that in a million years.
This film received Oscar nominations for Best Actor and which other category?
Give me a second. It is screenplay that it's done by Gary... Give me a second. 1 second.
You don't need to.
Oh, sure. Okay, but I think it's by Gary someone. Gary... someone.
Glitter.
Yes.
Doesn't matter. All I needed was best screenplay, best original screenplay. Yes. So you get the point. Well done.
And they didn't win, and neither did Tom Hanks. I'm furious.
Yep.
Absolutely furious.
You look angry.
Gemma, I've just realised that Mark's got his laptop open in front of him. Do you think he's got IMDb on there? Let me have a look.
Look, it's just the recording.
No, he's all right. He's not cheating. Okay. He's not cheating. He's doing well. He's doing very well. And then the final one, Mark, question 10. What song does Josh play on the walking piano that also plays over the movie's end credits?
Chopsticks.
Incorrect. He plays chopsticks on the piano during the scene, but he also plays another song that's in the credits called Heart and Soul. But anyway, Mark, I tell you what, mate, 7 out of 10.
Do you know what I thought you were going to ask me? It's just wound me up all week. I thought, you know, the opening scene where they have a video game he's playing on, that is called Cavern of the Evil Wizard, and right. I was waiting all week remembering the Beatles played at the Cavern, Evil Wizard. You never asked me.
Why did you have to think about the Beatles?
That's the only way you can remember it.
Good. How many?
7 out of 10.
Well right. done, yeah, well yeah, done. Yeah. That was good.
But just because you're one ahead of Gemma, that doesn't mean anything.
No, that's why I'm not cheering.
It's a 3-week game. So next time round, Mark, because you won this particular round, or because you're currently in the lead, you can be games master.
All right.
So next time round, it's going to be Pooch versus myself, and we will announce our specialist films on the episode.
I can't wait.
Time for Skip to the Recommend. It's that point of the show where we come to you with our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too. Marky Mark, you were really excited when you came in earlier, saying that you couldn't wait to talk about your recommendation this week. So I'm going to throw it to you first. What you got?
Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee on Netflix.
Seinfeld!
Yes. Yay. Jerry Seinfeld is the greatest human being alive. I will have no one argue. He's an intelligent, funny, brilliant guy. You like him for being in Seinfeld and just being a genius, but you'll like him even more after watching this series. It's such a simple concept that I should have thought of myself, and now I'll be driving around in really nice vintage cars talking to the likes of Jim Carrey and Alec Baldwin and everyone else. I've never been a petrol head or into cars, right? I don't give a shit. And all these people that drive these Cosworths and all this, I don't care. I have no interest. But for some reason, in this show, I love every car he picks. He picks a real nice vintage car, tells you for 1 minute what it's about, picks up one of his showbiz friends like Jim Carrey or Kirsten Wiig or Chris Rock or Tina Fey, and just drives to New York with them or wherever they are and takes them for coffee. As simple as that. And I've realised by watching this show that my attention span is 15 minutes. That's my perfect, not want to pick up my phone, not want to leave the room. That's my perfect attention span.
I love how after 35 years of life, you've just realised this. I know. Even though Gemma and I could have told you this years ago.
But 15 minutes is the perfect length. It really is. I've actually only watched the first 12 episodes, and I think on Netflix it's about 40.
Wow.
But I did scan through and see what's coming up. So far I've seen Jim Carrey, which is the launching episode.
Yeah.
Hilarious. This guy is brilliant. You don't just get an insight to their comedy. He's kind of talking about their lifestyle, them growing up, what they're doing. And you get it's like listening to a podcast, but seeing it on screen. They go out for lunch and they'll just sit there and have some food and coffee. It's so insightful that you really see this side of the person you've never seen before, because usually they're in a film or on showbiz or a talk show for a few minutes. But you get 15 minutes. So Jimmy Fallon, I absolutely loved. Alec Baldwin is one of the funniest guys in the world. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it. But it also introduced me to new people. So I was never aware of Trevor Noah. So he's a huge
Daily Show. From the Daily Show,
He's from the Daily Show. And I didn't know much about him. But before the episode, I thought, I'm not going to skip any I don't know. I'm going to stick with it. I sat there and Jerry Seinfeld brings out the best in everyone, I've realised.
Yeah.
Just because he's so cool. I need to go and see him live as well, whenever he plays. Mate. I even looked while I was on, and he's playing at the moment in Philadelphia, and it's £200 a ticket. And I was thinking, should we just go? Because I'm that much in love with him. I think I need to see him live. Kirsten Wiig, Chris Rock, Christoph Waltz, he actually gets a boat with and hires out for the day in New York. Tina Fey, which made me then buy a book. The best is yet to come. I've got Gervais, J.B. Smoove,
yeah.
Barrack himself, who? Obama.
Barrack.
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 Only the leader of the free world for 8 years.
Yeah.
Barrack.
Barrack.
Will Ferrell. Steve Martin and Larry David.
Larry David.
Nice. Yeah.
It really makes me want to drink coffee, I'm not going to lie. It makes me want to just drive around and have this lifestyle. I didn't realise how much I love Jerry Seinfeld until I watched this. He really is the coolest guy in the world. It's the best TV thing I've watched in years. It really is, because you can just fly through them. 4 episodes in an hour. You've then learnt about a new comedian or a biggest, like Chris Rock is just crazy. Like to see him for 10 minutes, you're just like, I can't be around this guy. He exhausts me. I am now more in love with Jerry Seinfeld than anything. I am in love with Netflix for giving us this series. And the best thing is, I've watched a quarter of it. I've still got even more to watch. And I'll be going home tonight. And I kind of don't want to skip. I don't want to skip straight to Larry David.
Yeah.
Larry David, the guy that helped write it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You've both seen it then?
I've seen bits. I've only seen a couple of episodes.
You've got to get on it. You will sit there and spend a weekend doing a lot.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, dude. And I mean it. Whenever we can see him play, I'm going.
Absolutely. And we should do our own version. Oh. Podcasters in Cars Drinking Brothers.
Yes! Oh!
Yeah. That'd be awesome. You're up for it. And we just pick up one Twitter follower that we like each time.
Yeah.
And we'll just tell them about us. We don't care what they have to say.
No, no.
We're like, we are.
We'll just talk at them.
Yeah, you just listen. And then they buy our drinks.
Yeah, then just drop them off somewhere.
Yeah. Like,
going back to you saying going and seeing Jerry live, I would love to do that. Mm. And one of the interesting things about Jerry Seinfeld is he has kind of a running debate with a lot of more modern comedians, people like Chris Rock, Ricky Gervais, and Louis C.K. before his downfall, about how they would always try and come up with new material. Every year they try to do a fresh hour. Whereas Jerry is still doing jokes he wrote 20 years ago. And his thought process is, give people the hits.
Yeah.
When you go and see a band, you want to see the hits. And Jerry has these jokes that he crafted. They're perfect. They're hilarious. They were hilarious in 1988, so why wouldn't they be hilarious in 2018?
Yeah.
And I get that. I do like to see new shit. If you're paying for it, you want to see new shit.
Yeah.
But I get, play the hits.
Yeah.
There's this bit when he's with Alec Baldwin and they're sat there and Alec Baldwin says something like, well, yeah, but you're not as old as me. He goes, actually, I'm 62 or something like that.
Yeah.
And Alec turns around to him and says, you're 62. How the hell do you look that good? And he turns around and goes, because I've never had to work in my life.
It's so true. He's been a comedian since he was like 16.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's the best.
Yeah.
He really is the best.
Is.
Get on it, Ben, because it's everything you want. Honestly, to see him talking to the likes of Christoph Waltz on a boat in New York, chilling, amazing.
Exactly. And if people aren't aware, every season of Seinfeld is currently available on Amazon Prime UK.
Ayo.
So get on that.
Amazon Prime. I am up for my subscription renewal soon. Oh. I could do with the 80 quid off. Yeah. So.
That's 80 quid off.
Yes. That's 80 quid.
Yeah. Send us some cash in the post.
So that's me. I'm all done. But it's probably the best one I've bought yet because personally, I absolutely love it. Like more than anything right now.
Amazing.
Good.
Pooch, what have you got?
I've gone for an online comedy series.
Ew.
That is on BBC iPlayer. And it's a comedy series called This Country.
This country.
This country. So it recently won a few awards last week, I believe, and it's a mockumentary written by real-life siblings Daisy Mae Cooper and Charlie Cooper. They both play cousins Kerry and Lee Curtin Mucklow, Curtin's the nickname, and they reside in a small Cotswold village, and their pastimes include starting gangs with year eights, getting shouted at by a non-visual mother, kind of like Tom and Jerry, and hanging out with the local vicar and entering and sabotaging scarecrow competitions.
As you do.
As you do. If you like The Office, you're going to like this too.
Big words.
And
that's massive words, mate.
And Charlie Cooper, who plays Curtin, even looks and sounds like a young Gareth Keenan.
Ooh.
He's got the accent, he's got the mopper top, and he's got the stupidity. And it's just such a warm and funny and authentic and genuine, hilarious show. About 20 minutes each episode, and it just basically depicts how in rural little villages like where the Mucklows are based at, there's just nothing for them to do. There's no job prospects. There's no career aspirations. There's no lifestyle changes to be had. They're just stuck in this vacuum of time where they just exist. And this show kind of highlights that, you know, these two people, they could have had so many chances in life, but they just never really grab the opportunity and take it. You know, it's not just funny, but it's also quite heart-wrenching at the same time. So Daisy Mae Cooper, who plays Kerry, she's by far the standout of the show. She's absolutely fantastic. She has a relationship, well, a non-existent relationship with her father. Her father's very resentful because he didn't have a boy. with her.
Yeah.
So she's just a daughter. He's only interested in his other sons with other women that he's had relationships with. And watching her try and build this relationship is so heartbreaking. But of course, it's so funny at the same time, especially with the style it's been filmed at. It does make you want to watch the next episode immediately, because they're only about 20 minutes, as I've said. There's two seasons currently at the moment on BBC iPlayer. And it's also heartbreaking that BBC Three is off the air. So they took that off the air about 2 years ago now. So all of their content is online. And it meant that it robbed a lot of people the chance to watch Murder in Successville, People Just Do Nothing, another great mockumentary show, and now this. But with the exposure it's recently gotten with these awards that it won last week, the momentum for the show is gradually growing and growing.
Yeah.
And the Coopers are fantastic writers, fantastic comedy actors. Go check it out.
So yeah, I'm not familiar with this, but going back to your point about BBC Three being taken off the air, real talk, a lot of what was on BBC Three was utter dog shit.
Oh.
But there was a lot of, you know, kernels of magic
yes.
in there. There was a lot of great stuff, and it was a breeding ground for really great comedians. And so I think Mighty Boosh was on BBC Three first.
It started out.
You know, and we've lost that now.
Mm-hmm.
And I resent the fact that I pay out. How much do we fucking
too
pay
much.
for the license fee? 120
yeah.
quid for fucking EastEnders.
Yeah.
But they take innovative shit like that off
exactly.
the air.
Exactly. And we're instead forced in the UK to watch shows such as Not Going Out, which isn't really that funny. And it's on season 28 now.
I tell you what, Gemma, Not Going Out, Not Going On in my house.
But I do agree with
Tragic.
You in terms of the comedy content. To have this experimentation where it does actually work out, why isn't this stuff on mainstream TV? But then again,
people are idiots.
Yeah. But then again, when you do find little gems like this, it's worth investing in. I'm thoroughly enjoying this. Season 2 is currently playing out. I believe the last episode of season 2 is out next week, but it's worth a go.
Isn't it nice, Ben, that me and you found a little gem?
Hey.
I'm 5'2", guys. It's all true.
So, Ben, what have you got for
yeah.
us?
This won't surprise you, Mark,
in
the least.
It's a book.
Is it a book?
No.
Oh!
It's an album.
Oh!
And it's the album Muerte by Will Haven.
So good!
Oh, my Lord. I've talked about Will Haven a few times on this podcast. They started out as a run-of-the-mill new metal band in the mid-90s, and they came up alongside their friends and fellow Sacramentans, Deftones. And they didn't really hit the heights that Deftones did for whatever reason. But they've since developed far away from these new metal roots into this monstrously heavy sludge act. They're now kind of somewhere between the Deftones and Neurosis, with a little bit of Dillinger Escape Plan thrown in. And if you're a metal fan, those words should make you salivate. And this new record, Muerte, it maintains the sludgy atmosphere of their best records, 2001's masterpiece, Carpe Diem, and 2011's return to form, Voidir. But it sees them add a bit more vibrancy to the songs by increasing the dynamics. It's just so out there and experimental. The whole kind of verse, chorus, verse structure doesn't mean a fucking thing
nah.
to Will Haven. They are not interested in that shit. And the production on this record, oh, it is so crisp. And the sound is so thick. It's just this wall of noise, but where you can pick out every individual instrument so clearly, clear as a bell. It's just a magnificent record. And there are so many standout tunes, and it pains me to kind of pick specific tunes. But I guess I would say the record opener, Hued with the Brand, leads with this simple, pummeling, instantly hummable riff. I found myself humming this nasty, dark riff all week at work. And it really sets out the store for what's going to come in the record. There's another track, Mark. It was the one that you sent me a text about that you were
yeah.
enjoying. A track called Ladwig Number 949, which is probably the most fun track on the record.
Yeah.
It harkens back to their kind of new metal roots. It's very bouncy. And then there's another song, the groovy and gloomy The Sun, which zigs just when you think it's going to zag. You cannot conceive of what's going to come next. And I think it might be the best thing they've ever written.
It's
Sun.
Incredible.
I'm getting chills just thinking about it, and I just want to get rid of you dudes out of my house so I can listen to this record. Do you know
I
what
see
I mean?
Goosebumps. In his pants.
Yeah. Always.
It's just amazing. For a band that have been around for something like 22 years and they're still just killing it. And the problem is Grady, their singer, Grady Avenell, has mentioned that this might be their last record, which would break my heart. It really would. But it'd be a hell of a way to go out because it's fucking awesome.
Every day since the album's come out, I've been going on Google and just refreshing, looking for some tour dates, because
yeah.
I want to go and see it live. I want to see how they pull it off, which I know they will.
Mm.
No pun there, Will. But no, I do want to go, dude, because we missed out last time. We just didn't bother going for some reason, so we're going to go. As soon as they announce some tours or festivals, we're there.
I'm praying they will tour England this summer or autumn.
Yeah.
I think Download have finalised their bill now. They might end up on the Bloodstock bill, you never know, but hopefully they'll do their own tour anyway.
They might listen to this podcast and think, let's go to Download.
I bloody hope so.
Yeah. For Mark and Ben.
Isn't it? You've heard it.
It's amazing, dude. I listened and I text you about it and thinking, I wonder why he's not telling me what he thinks, and now I realise.
Exactly, yeah. I don't want to give it away.
I was like, surely you're the first person to listen to this the moment it comes out. And you're just like, yeah, I haven't listened to it yet. I'm like, yeah. That's bullshit. And now I know why.
I just, some of the songs, the term I've already used is they zig when you think they're going to zag. Yeah. You think they're going one way, and then they'll just switch.
It's like Truth Movement.
It's very like Truth Movement. You know, anything Corey does.
I love the track with Steph from Deftones, and it feels like they've given him the chance to actually just be metal, where his last album with Deftones, Gore, was very, very polished and very kind of indie sounding at times.
Yeah.
And it sounds like a lot of the guitar that he normally adds to the Deftones sound and makes it so Deftones was taken away.
Yeah.
And in this song, they've gone, do what you want, mate. Don't worry about the rest of the band members. Do what you want. Yeah. And he's gone, right, here's my sixth string. Boom.
Exactly. Boom. Let's fucking rock.
And gives us everything that we love.
Yeah, and there's another song on it called No Escape, which features clean vocals by a vocalist called Mike Scheid, who's in a band called Yob, who are a classic doom metal band. He also did a song with Red Fang called Dawn Rising. He's kind of the go-to guy if you want clean vocals on like a hardcore record. But just everything about it is sublime. I fucking love it.
That's good.
What?
Yeah, is that your entire input, Gemma? That's good. Enjoy that, fellas.
That's nice.
Yeah. Get on it. We'll bring you with us when we go and see it.
I do like the idea of something not being structural, like, you know, of the norm. I dig that.
Yeah, man, they just do their own thing. And that's why they've always been great and forever shall be.
Cool. It's hard as well to go away and come back stronger. Not many bands do that. Thrice did it, but not many do.
So true.
And Corey Feldman.
And Franz Ferdinand. What is the good, beautiful, sexy, gorgeous, absolutely sexy as fuck social media people come back with this time?
Quite sexy.
Yeah. I know.
Hell. Okay. On Facebook, Steve Jordan has said, "This Is Us," which is a TV show, hard-hitting, emotional, and some of the best acting performances to hit the small screen in years. Have any of you seen This Is Us?
No.
I've watched a couple of episodes, and it's one of the most popular TV series out there.
Yeah.
And people bloody love it.
In the US,
I've not had a chance to kind of get enough of it.
I've heard a lot of people just cry at it.
Yeah.
You know, the credits come up, and they're like...
it's supposed to be amazing.
Yeah.
I cried when I saw it at the State of the World for making this show, because... It's fucking awful.
Why?
Hideous, awful, tripe.
There you go.
But, you know, Steve likes it, so well done. On Twitter, Brian, at BobaFett8MyTV, which is a brilliant handle.
Love it.
Has said, "You should check out Hip Hop Evolution on Netflix. It charts the growth and change in hip hop and rap from its beginnings in the Bronx of New York to the gangster rap of NWA and Tupac." Pooch, you're twitching when I say this.
I know, I've just started watching it.
Is it good?
It's cracking.
Yeah?
So, so good.
Alex Watts on Facebook has said, "Camp Cope, a female punk band from Australia. Saw them live last week and they were incredible. And the new album, How to Socialise and Make Friends, is brilliant."
Wow.
Nice.
I love a bit of punk.
Yeah, and to know that it's a band she's seen live and can recommend to us, you know it's going to be good.
And girl punk.
Yeah.
Excellent. Nerds Chatting at Nerds Chatting on Twitter have said, "If Mark and Ben like westerns, you know we do, please check out Godless on Netflix. It's incredible. Plus it's only 7 episodes, so Mark can handle it." Well, we know he's got a 15-minute attention span.
I've honestly switched off. What are you on about?
Have you watched Godless yet on Netflix?
No, and do you know what? When I saw that tweet come through, I then typed on Google Godless. The reviews are insane.
It stars Jeff Daniels.
Wow.
And it is good. I did like it. It didn't blow me away.
Okay.
Good, not great. Mm. But worth a watch, certainly.
I'll blow you away.
Moving on. Granny Bizzle on Instagram.
Granny Bizzle?
Yeah.
I love these names.
Yeah. Hans Zimmer, live in Prague. It's on Netflix and it's a treat for all soundtrack fans. One of the masters serves up a plethora of his greatest works spanning his career. Bliss. Yep. Granny Bizzle says bliss.
I've added it on my list and I'm going to watch it one night and I'm going to have a glass of whiskey. Nothing's going to be in the house. It's going to be the lights dimmer for Zimmer.
Nice.
Thank you.
You are our resident score whore, so I'm not surprised you're going to be watching that.
Scott told me, our good friend of the podcast, that he's got it and he's been listening to it on Spotify.
Who's that? Scott plus one Higgins?
It is. He told me it's one of the best things you can ever hear with headphones on. Just sit there and let yourself... Because everyone knows the music of his. You don't realise. Yeah. It's a bit like John Williams. Once you put one on, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I can imagine in time.
Now it's on Netflix. I've got no excuse.
Yeah, get involved.
Yeah.
back on Twitter, Robert Howard at Freelancer said, I don't know if you folks have watched Happy on Sci-Fi, but the show is amazeballs. Now, before we talk about it, I need to have a word with Robert about the use of the term amazeballs. Shouldn't do it, mate.
Not anymore.
Grow up, yeah?
Yeah. But okay. I love
it. What do you mean anymore? Never.
Okay, never. He's been using it for about the past 3 years.
For fuck's
no,
sake.
No, but I like the guy who's put his contribution to us.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's very nice.
But I haven't watched Happy. Have any of you watched Happy yet?
No.
It's based on a comic book by Grant Morrison, who's an absolute genius. It's about, I've not read it yet, but it's about like a detective, I think, who has kind of a mental breakdown. Then he starts seeing this little blue donkey that sort of instructs him. And they've made a TV show of it, and it looks fucking mental.
It does sound absolutely bizarre.
So I want to read the comic and watch the show.
And I love donkeys.
And I love blue donkeys.
Especially,
Match made in heaven.
You ever been to a donkey show when they...
I've been to...
What, in Mexico?
Yeah, really good.
I don't think we're talking about the same donkeys, Mark.
Horny Hilda's.
Definitely,
really good.
Definitely not. Yeah.
That's very specific.
I know. Like you've lived that.
It's in Blackpool. It's really good. Horny Hilda's and Horny Hilda's.
What's the
That's
next
Horny Hilda's.
Yes. I really want a free donkey wank.
Stephen Young on Facebook has mentioned another podcast. Shame. Oh. Shouldn't have to, mate.
Don't cheat on
Shouldn't
us.
Shouldn't have to. But he said, how did this get made? Really funny podcast where they comment on really poor movies, and it has the guy from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Jason Mantzoukas. It does, and Paul Scheer as well. Mm-hmm. It's a great bunch of comedians who talk about shit movies and, you know, ask, how did this get made?
Yeah, that's the guy, Derek from The Good Place, right?
Yes, Jason Mantzoukas. He's like the guest star king. He's in every show you like.
Yeah, he's great.
In one or two episodes, yeah. It's a really, really good podcast. Have you listened to it, Mark?
No, but it's when Film 4 did their top four podcasts in the world of movies, and it was Empire, Us, Them, and Commode.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Not a bad group to be in, is it? Yeah.
I was quite happy to see us above them, but it was nice to see us, you know. Yeah.
Abso-fucking-lately. Get Into Cinema on Twitter at CinemaGet has said, Scored to Death podcast. Another podcast. I'm not happy about this. Another podcast. Interesting stuff. Chatting to composers of horror scores.
Nice
insight to the behind-the-scenes stuff in great detail.
I would imagine there's an episode with Goblin for the Suspiria score.
That would be good.
I would really want to hear that.
Yeah. This sounds right up your street, Pooch. Yeah. I would get on this.
I'm on it.
Oh, something that's right up my street. On Facebook, Paula Mulder said the Santa Clarita Diet on Netflix.
Yes!
Season 2, yeah.
Yeah,
it's out now!
She said it's the funniest, most disgusting series ever. I binge-watched season 2 last weekend. It's so funny. It's so goofy and so silly, but the performances are great, the characters are wonderful, the writing is daft as hell. I love it. Have you watched season 2 yet?
I've watched season 1, and I thought Drew Barrymore was fantastic, and I fancy the guy.
Timothy Oliphant.
Is it not?
He's dreamy.
Can you see why he's dreamy?
He's an insanely handsome dude.
I love him.
And, you know, if you've watched... Justified, he's brilliant in Justified. If you watch Deadwood, he's brilliant
in
Deadwood. He was in a couple of episodes. And that's
Camp
the thing.
Day.
And that's the point I was about to make. Most of his career was dramatic work, so it's nice seeing him do comedy, and he's very, very good
at it.
He's
superb. I'm on episode 3 at the moment. There's been a major little plot twist on the end of episode 2.
Yeah.
I'm loving it.
Yeah,
it's
a hell of a lot of fun.
My dream is me, him and Gosling in a sandwich.
I don't need to hear about your...
I'm just saying.
Nobody asked him either. Yes. That wasn't prompted.
No.
was not prompted.
If a listener questions, who would you have in a sandwich? Them two.
Brilliant. I don't know when that'll come up.
I don't know. It's changed.
I'll come up.
I don't know what to do with that. I don't know
just
how to process it. I don't know how to process
just
it,
move to the next one.
I'm just as lost as you, Ben.
Moving on.
Keep it in. That's what Ryan said.
And finally, Easy Riders Raging Podcast at ERRR Podcast. Can I recommend the fantastic comic series The Umbrella Academy by Gerard Way and Gabrielle Barr, which plays out like a weirdo, time-travel-filled version of the X-Men?
Did you say Gerard Way?
Yeah, this is it.
My Chemical Romance.
Yeah. That's the dude from that. I didn't know he wrote comics.
I love that. So keep your recommendations coming, yeah?
That's good.
Yeah, keep your recommendations coming in. You can get us all in the usual ways. You can get us on Twitter at STTE Podcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, on Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or if you're really old school, podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. As we edge ever closer to the 100. We're not far off now, are we?
Really not far off.
I think we should start planning what we're going to do for that one soon.
Yeah, retire.
That'd be nice. I think we should go out at 99. I think that would be good. Like, everyone's like, oh my God, it's the big 100. And we call it a day on that one before.
Yeah, juice them up, leave them dangling.
Yeah.
That's our style, isn't it? Juicy danglers.
And then we'll do a reunion podcast in 10 years.
Yeah.
That were good.
And no one will listen. No one will care.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Have we got some listener questions?
We have. First of all, we've got Ben Oram who says, as we reach the peak of 1980s nostalgia, which star from that decade do you think most deserves a comeback? Good question.
Ooh. I think we might have touched on this a little bit before, but I'd have to go with Steve Guttenberg.
Oh, I'm with you every way, man.
Yeah, man. He's done a few guest spots in recent years. He turned up on an episode of Community.
Yes.
He was on an episode of a show called Party Down. If you've never seen Party Down, it's one of the funniest shows of all time. But someone needs to give him a big part. He was really one of the funniest guys of the 80s,
yeah.
Wasn't he? He needs someone to give him a vehicle to say, here you go. And have you seen what he looks like these days?
He looks great.
He's a monster. He's clearly been on the roids, possibly.
Really?
I don't want to accuse
he's
him of
roids. He's not on the roids.
Well, he's been working out, but he's massive.
Yeah,
he's a mutant.
Bloody hell, so he likes arm and leg day, basically.
Big time. Like Mark. I
always
see
him.
Mark.
Yeah. Always. That's why he's not in the films.
Oh, Jimmy boy over here.
I agree, dude. Like, I was watching Short Circuit again the other day. And I was just like, he's just so charming. I love him in Police Academy. I love him in that. He's just a great
Cocoon,
guy.
Yeah. Three Men and a Little Lady. Yeah.
Oh,
baby,
yes.
Yeah, just beautiful.
Oh, we mentioned it earlier. Bring back Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
I think, I might not know. I think he had loads of tragic stuff going on in his life. Aww. Which meant he didn't want, I think like he lost
retired, yeah, he did. I think his wife died or something like that. And then he chose to retire.
Oh my God, I just want to give him a hug.
I know, but he doesn't need that right now. James Ward Brown has come through on Facebook and has asked, what would your Oasis avatars look like?
Noel Gallagher. Oh, you mean Oasis from Ready Player One?
Bonehead.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, well, everyone bloody loves Bonehead.
That's a great question. It goes nicely with our Ready Player One episode. So, Gemma, tell me. Tell me now. Come on.
All right,
tell me.
Jesus, all right, Jim. Jeez.
Jim.
Well,
oh, actually, can we just take a second to remember Jim Bowen? He's passed away.
Please.
He was a good guest for us.
R.I.P. Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
So, because I'm not very tall in real life, I kind of want to be like a tall kind of Chun-Li-esque avatar. So I could kick ass, but I also want like the kind of Jessica Rabbit style good looks too.
And her body.
And her body.
You've got the ginger hair.
Yeah.
Sorry, red
hair. Yeah. Auburn. Not... Strawberry blonde.
Am I right, Mark?
Brother and sister, man.
Yeah,
but you chose it, Gemma, you didn't.
But yeah, I think I'd want to kind of be like this sort
that'd
of
look good.
Sassy kind of kick-ass kind of lady.
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 A lady. Ben?
Whenever I play games that have, like, create a character option, like the WWE games or the FIFA games, I always try and create a character that looks exactly like me, which I don't know if it's a failure of imagination or if it's egotism, I don't know, but I think my avatar would look exactly like me. Either that or Zangief from Street Fighter.
Yes!
Why are we all going for the old Street? I should be Blanka. Yes. Green with massive orange hair.
Blanka, wanker.
I'd go for the kind of classic 80s look of Marty McFly, so I'd be in the old Nike Buens. That's Nike. Could do some trainers. We all like Nike.
Yeah.
An 80s cap, some jeans, some shades, and a Dark Bunny Tees t-shirt.
Would you have a gilet?
A gilet.
A padded gilet.
You'd look good in a gilet, Mark.
I can see you gileting up
a
the
red
place.
One. That'd be amazing.
To match with our hair.
It's so classic, isn't it? She's one of us. I don't know what you'd say.
One of us.
And the final question comes from Will Cross. What's the most mesmerising moment in a film that's left you thinking about it for months, even maybe years? His is the scene in Magnolia about the whole Wise Up.
Oh, where the song Wise Up is playing. Yeah, that's good.
Magnolia should be a future feature.
It's going to be, buddy. It's on my list. Don't worry about
that. This is a tough one, and I'm thinking something quite recent. I know there's all these special effects that leave you speechless, but the film that had the biggest impact where I was thinking about it and the editing and everything else was the final scene of Whiplash.
Oh my God, yes.
I was talking to Ben and Gemma for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know how he edited it. I know he's not a real drummer. People that are so anal said, oh, actually, if you look, he isn't hitting the right part of the drum. I don't care. It looked like that guy was playing that whole drum performance.
Yeah.
So that's enough for me.
I'm still blown away by the Stargate scene in 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Oh, so
it's
good.
It's perfection. And to think this was the late 60s when they didn't even have the caliber to create these mesmerizing visual effects. And they managed to do it of that time. It's incredible. It's a real achievement and a real feat in cinematic history. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think for me it would be either of the musical montages from Donnie Darko.
Oh my god, yeah.
So either the opening montage scored to Head Over Heels, where you're meeting all the main characters in Donnie's school, or the montage towards the end that scored to Mad World, where you see all the characters dealing with the aftermath of the film.
Yeah.
They're really haunting. Especially the latter one.
Mm-hmm. When you think of stuff that actually makes you think for years, think of that wheelchair going off the cliff on Mac and Me. Think about it. And the way that Mac's head just pops up and looks around.
Yeah.
Like his little bum hole.
How did they do that?
Not a day goes by that I don't think on that and weep.
And you know every single day that Christopher Nolan's took that inspiration.
Big time.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what have we got coming up on the next episode, guys?
I don't know.
I should point out that we drink a lot on these podcasts lately.
I think our regular listeners are well aware of that.
It's episode 94, and our big main review is
Rampage, starring Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
That's going to be good.
Yeah, and we're definitely doing that by choice, not because it's the only film out that week.
Yeah,
it's going to be amazing.
Yeah,
look out for that one in the Oscars next year.
I'm going to be giving the people's elbow to you all.
I hope he lays the smackdown on that donkey that I saw in it. In the trailer.
Donkey!
Probably. Mark, what is our topic?
It's our top three romantic couples. I think that's a great one because there's a lot to choose from.
Could be good.
It's got a lot. Don't you think it could be good?
Well,
it's skipped to the end. It's guaranteed to be great.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And our rewatch is going to be Sunshine. Oh, man. We all did a little merry dance when I announced it because we've talked around it, but not about it.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about it because it's cool.
Yeah. And we're going to be movie masturbating over Robert Downey Jr.
Yes!
Oh, my God.
That's going to be a corker.
RDJ.
I've just realised.
RDJ.
We're actually going to be bringing sunshine to people's lives again. That's nice.
Damn straight.
We're also going to be announcing the winners of all that Ready Player One stuff. There's absolutely loads. You heard it all.
There was a chuckload of prizes.
And by the time you're listening to this episode, you'll be wearing a Skip to the End t-shirt.
I can't wait
to see the people posting their pictures and selfies with that on.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, we have approximately 150,000 listeners per episode now. And if all of you buy one of these t-shirts, it won't just have to be Mark that hasn't got a job. Me and Gemma could quit as.
Heyo!
And we could pay it and buy a house. So stop being selfish. Buy a t-shirt.
Get involved, for the love of Christ. We'll have all the usual goodies. We're going to have the second round of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mastermind, which is going to be myself versus Gemma.
Hello.
So I'll be the ass master.
As the
or
ass
the games
quiz.
Master.
Yeah, either way is fine. Well, you know, speak to Timothy Oliphant about you being the ass master.
Or Ryan Gosling.
Ah, dear. We'll have our recommendations of the week, all the other usual goodies. See you in 2 weeks.